Good morning, everybody. I hope you're off to a good start this Friday morning. And we are live. James and Flex producing. I am Gareth Cliff. This is Gareth Cliff Show. It is the Real Network. And if you haven't checked out all of our other fantastic shows, you are missing out, man. Today is the last day of our latest season of Blind History. We have got episode 10, right?
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to find out about the history of a remarkable woman called... I never knew who she was until we recorded this a couple of days ago. Bertha or Bertha Benz. The surname should be familiar at very least, right? Carl Benz, her husband, started the Mercedes-Benz brand. I think it's 140 years ago. They celebrate 140 years this year. And this woman was, wow. And not just because she chose a good husband. She's got an incredible and fascinating history, which I think you'll enjoy finding out about. So, if you haven't already, get in there and subscribe to Blind History and to all our other fantastic shows. You'll find plenty of stuff to keep you entertained, inspired, informed, and empowered. So, it's Friday again. The weekend is here. And I don't know about you, but it felt like a real summer this week because it was hot every single day. You know when you find yourself just trying to find a cool place the whole time? And if you work in an air-conditioned office, you didn't go outside because it was nicer where there was aircon. And if you're in the car, you got that on. It's not... I can complain about it, and most people do that. Oh, it's really hot, eh? But that's the whole reason we live in this country. It's the whole reason we love summer. So I'm not going to complain. And I know we'll be bitching and moaning up the yin-yang when we decide that we are cold in the middle of winter. So I'm not moaning. Just let's be sure about that. So I see in the news, if you had to do a little search on what happened in the news this week, the DA, as I predicted last Friday, didn't I? I said DA's in trouble, ANC's in trouble, MK's in trouble, EFF's in trouble. So if you are looking for a political solution... a political savior. I've got very bad news for you. The reason I say the DA is in trouble this week is because their leader is gone. John Steenhuisen has decided not to run as leader of the party again. It's not the biggest story in the world. I mean, I think that whether he was a success or a failure, and there has been lots of analysis from people who know a lot more about the internal workings of the DA than I do. And many of them have said, oh, no, he was a total disaster, and John was weak, and that the DA is headed in the wrong direction. And then there are people who said the opposite, people who said that they think that he was terrific, he did a great job. So I honestly haven't got very strong feelings about this. It did not make my week better or worse. And if it did yours, you're either in the DA or you're very stupid. Those are the only two options. There's no third rail here for you to go down. So that happened. There are a couple of names that have been thrown into the hat here. We've got Jordan Hill Lewis as the front runner. So I'll try and do this like a race announcer at the horse races. Well, and then the most likely contender is Jordan Hill Lewis, followed by the Basic Education Minister, Sviwe Harube. Then they've got the Gauteng leader, Solly Mzimanga, and the former Deputy Minister, Andrew Whitfield. And veteran politician Helen Ziller was also being discussed in there. She could come in from the outside and take a very quick win. I don't think so, but there we go. As quickly as I could possibly do it. It was either that or the auctioneer voice. I went with the horse racing guy. But do you think you'll lose a second of sleep if any of those people does or doesn't become the next leader of the DA? That's the truth, right? We need these people in our lives. The less you have politicians involved in your stuff, the happier you will be. Leanne Moore's here.
I heard you were speaking my language. Were you calling me?
What, horse racing?
Yeah.
Is that your thing? Are you a gambler?
No.
Is this another, have you replaced your vice of smoking, which by the way, you're
still not smoking, but
good for you.
Damn, it's hard. I'm not going to ever do it again.
When do you miss it the most?
But it's not going away.
When do you miss it the most? And don't say all the time.
Why can't I?
No.
Obviously when I'm drinking wine,
yeah.
at night. But even in the morning,
that's
it's
a
like,
trigger.
Yeah, in the morning, it just doesn't go away. And when we went on the course, they said,
"Look at you! Look how fabulous you're looking."
Thanks.
Did the doctor tell you that if you?
Well, it wasn't a doctor.
No. But I mean, yeah. You have 100 doctors yeah, with all your problems.
Which so doctor?
Please, fucking take a pick, right?
Witch doctor. But
Leanne,
which
Leanne
doctor?
Has. You know how you maybe have 2 or 3 people on speed dial. Leanne has like 55 physicians, specialists.
I was searching more just yesterday. I found one for my bunions because I've got to go for my bunions
next. That's so gorgeous. You know what I love is when you meet a woman and you think, oh, she's nice. And then she goes, my bunions.
I can show you them.
Really I'd rather not see your bunions, thank you.
You don't want to see them.
Don't you think that's attractive, guys? Don't you want to meet a girl who says to you one day, you know, I would like to share my bunions with you.
You know when men say, I just want a real woman. This is a real woman. Shall I show you?
No! Hell no.
But I want to.
No, so I was going to ask you a serious question before you keep looking for more doctors. Look at her. She can't help herself.
No, I wanted to go.
How many appointments you got today?
I've got a reminder on my way here of my appointment next week.
See? So has your doctor...
I just want to search doctor just in my appointment.
No, Leanne, I don't want you to. Listen to this. If you have given up smoking early enough, your lungs can almost completely recover.
Yeah. Like you can reverse your chances of
getting
cancer.
Lung cancer or whatever, yes. Throat cancer.
How long?
So are you too old to reverse that process? Or you,
it's not about...
Are you too fucked to be able to get back in there?
Have
your lungs given up? And they go,
I Googled, am I too fucked? No, I'm kidding. It's actually not about age. It's about how.
There she goes. Gorgeous. That and the bunions. That's what people come for in the morning.
It's not about how old you are. It's about how long you've been smoking.
Yeah, but for you, it's been years.
Well,
several decades.
20 years I smoked for.
Okay. Okay. So what do they say?
I can't find any literature
about this.
So all I found is how long after you've stopped. So I'm now basically in the clear.
Okay. Well, how long have you not been smoking for? 2 months?
No.
3 months?
Yeah, 3 months.
Okay, that's pretty good. Just keep it up. Don't
oh,
give
no,
in.
I'll never go back to it.
Yeah,
that's
but, you'll,
the thing.
But you might have a ciggy if you...
No.
You won't?
No.
You'll never do that?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so
never
you've become
again.
Like a... Okay.
Never again. I'm an
You're a smoke Nazi now.
Non-smoker, ex-smoker, yeah. But I will not
I heard
cover the fact that I crave it all the time.
I heard such an interesting thing yesterday while we're on the topic of health. There's this doctor who has done exercise studies with his patients and people who are able to, if they can do enough cardiovascular weight training and kind of zone 5 exercise where your maximum heart rate's at like 90% of what it could be, you know, so your maximum heart rate, let's say, is 180 beats per minute. If you can get to 160, 170, and you can sustain that for like 4 or 5 minutes. Apparently, it's twice a week or something.
Mm.
You can actually de-age your heart by 20 years, even if you're in your 50s, which is remarkable. And it actually changes the shape of the ventricles in your heart. It can actually re-engineer that organ, which is phenomenal.
That is amazing. I do reach that heartbeat.
You do? Why? Because you got hypertension.
Because I'm tachycardic.
There we go. Jesus. Okay. So who's your cardiothoracic surgeon? Who's your cardiologist?
No, I don't have one of those. But I did go off of one of my blood pressure medications.
Yeah.
You have as many doctors as I do. You start to learn the inter
doctor communications.
Yes. Yeah. So, for instance,
no one can read their handwriting, right? So, how do they talk to each other, these doctors?
So, for instance, when I went to my overall doctor,
Jesus, that poor man.
She said,
that poor woman.
she said, why are you on this medication for your blood pressure? And I said, well, it was this doctor that put me on it.
Yeah, can you imagine the contraindications in Leanne's pharmacy?
Yeah, no, she said you're
that person is managing. That's like having a juggler who's got 20,000 balls in the air going, wait, there's don't get hit by that one.
I mean, the information just on the medication inserts.
Yes, sis.
Which I have to take overseas with me when I travel in a bundle. She said to me, why are you on that medication? Because that one for blood pressure is actually notoriously bad for your lungs. And she said, and by the way, that doctor who put you on that abdicated. He disappeared one day. She said, we were working on a patient together.
You mean absconded?
Absconded, perhaps.
Just fucked off.
Yes.
Absconded. Really? Well, so after working on you for so long.
They had a shared patient who was in like ICU and on their deathbed.
Oh, no.
And during that stage, he just disappeared.
Just decided, I don't want this anymore.
And she said, I can't say much about it. And I said, was it malpractice? And she said, I'm not going to say no.
Ooh.
She said, you've been on this medication for 8 years.
And it's because of him.
And it's really bad for your lungs. And I don't know why I gave it to you. But anyway, yeah, so he had a malpractice thing and he disappeared.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for in the Leanne Health section of the show this morning.
Please move on, please.
Have you seen all these pictures people are putting up of them?
Yes.
ChatGPT'd and they got a caricature of themselves.
I had a client send me one of theirs last night.
Everybody looks so good, right? They make everyone look super cute, young, beautiful, symmetrical. I looked at some of these pictures. I'm like, you don't look like
that. Have you done
that
one of yourself?
No. Someone else did one for me.
Of you.
Mm. I'll show you, but it's just shit. I mean, I don't think – I don't like these things. It's shit because I don't think I look like this.
But, I mean, it's just it's an upgrade. Let me see it.
God, I forgot you can't see either.
I have to take my glasses off
to see. Oh, my God. Look at this.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it, you know.
You know,
but it's accurate in terms of the history stuff. You've got Julius Caesar statue there.
It's obviously
history, ancient Rome.
How hard is that to get? I've been telling people what I care about.
Why do you love tomatoes so much?
It's what I eat. No, I think that was one of the things that this person put into the prompt. Yeah, but I don't know. Just you guys have got to realize, like, you don't look like that. I mean, in this one, I have just – everything's perfect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I never, ever have and never will look that good. So it's ridiculous.
Remember
– and by the way, it slims everyone down as well. I've seen a couple of these ones where there are huge disparities in the size of the person and the way they're depicted in the caricature.
I think the irritating part about this is that once someone does this – of themselves, they think, oh, is that how the world sees me?
No.
I look pretty good.
No. Be under no illusion, anybody. If this has happened to you. And you know what? I've seen them, some of the, like I said, some of them make people look really good. You think, wow, some good-looking people in the world. Then you compare them in that picture with what they really look like.
You know what? It's just a bit of fun, but I see where it gets irritating.
So those have been happening this week. James, have you got that picture of those ice guys? Oh, look, there's Ben. Ah, Ben is in Sun City, our favorite place. Ben, how are you?
Ben the Gypsy, the traveler.
Look, he's wearing his dressing gown again. You know, you would have made a very good, like, Hugh Hefner type. I mean, the whole dressing gown thing works well. Are you there with Tots?
No, Gareth, I don't hang around Tots.
Very Epstein this week.
Hey, it's only Epstein if they're underage, Leanne.
That's true.
And trust me, there are enough people in the Epstein file. We'll get into that.
You can measure
now as
them
well.
With your fingers.
Jesus.
Anyway.
Yeah, guys, there's always just certain things about Sun City that just make you feel happy. Like, so we're here shooting an episode of Golf Toured, which is a TV show that's coming out soon, where basically we tour in the country. Well, friends of mine are making the show anyway. So we're doing the Sun City episode today. And then we started yesterday at the Valley of Waves, like all 14-year-old children do. Yes. And in keeping with the Winter Olympics, we tried to luge whatever we could. So, yeah.
I saw that video. It's great. Now, you're obviously going to do some golf while you're there, right? You're going to play some golf. You're going to check out the Gary Player, the famous Gary Player Country Club, right?
Yeah, I'm currently on the 10th floor looking out, and I can see the sweeping views of one of my happiest places in the world, the Mr. Gary Player Country Club. The sun's coming up on the right. You know, it's always just pure theater, this place. It just is. It's so fun.
I always say to people who've never been to Sun City or who have shitty things to say about it, that it's kind of, it's like a mini South African version of Las Vegas. You know?
Yeah.
It's always nice weather. There's all of the gambling and the casino and the entertainment that's laid on. But it also is, it's not really in Joburg or Pretoria. It's far. It's at least an hour and a bit, hour and a half or so away. So you do feel like you're in a different world.
Yeah. I have a Zimbabwean colleague, and he was trying to get something delivered to Sun City. But coming from Zimbabwe, he'd never seen Sun City before or heard of it.
Mind-blowing.
We were explaining it to him and showing him pictures, and we showed him the Valley of the Waves, and he was like, this is unbelievable. I heard him on the phone later, speaking to the person he had couriered this thing through, saying, no, it's at Sun City. It's where the Valley of the Water is.
All right, so Leanne brought up Epstein, and she thought she could just slide past that story. So the big Epstein release, all the files, because I really thought that this thing had died out. It was a bit of a damp squib, and people weren't interested anymore.
Like Trump said himself, really get over it.
Yeah, and I thought maybe people had, because there wasn't a whole lot of there. And then this week, just plenty of stuff going on. So let's start off with the two Brits who have been implicated in all of this. The obvious first place to start is Prince Andrew, who is now not Prince Andrew anymore. He's now Andrew Mountbatten Windsor of 14 railway cuttings, Bermondsey.
Yeah. 14 railway cuttings, yes. In a council house.
Yeah, exactly. So Charles kicked him out early because they are getting very, very bad press for Andrew. Andrew, we thought Prince Harry was the worst thing that could happen to the royal family.
Yes,
but
when he wore that Nazi outfit.
The Nazi outfit's nothing.
We thought that would end him.
Compared to this.
But it turns out being a prince lying over a body of a girl who's been drugged to a state of unconsciousness is worse than that.
Just when you think that there is a member of the royal family who will not take things to a new low, Prince Andrew steps in. And as if he isn't bad enough, he's also his ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson, the former Duchess of Pork. She...
Oh, quite fiery.
I have seen so many clips this week from people who have nothing nice to say about Andrew or Fergie, that they were both grifters of the highest order. Greedy and needy were the words they used to describe them. And that this woman, this Sarah Ferguson, would... She was still in contact with Epstein and staying on his various properties and taking free money and holidays or whatever else she could. After he had been convicted in 2008 of being a sex predator and pedophile. And he even received emails from Sarah Ferguson like, I'm coming over. I'm going to bring the girls, who were at that stage maybe in their
teens.
His target market, right. what kind of horrible people are these? So if anybody ever says to you, well, you know, they're royal, so they must be better than you and me. Hell no. The other one is a guy called Lord Peter Mandelson, who is...
Manhandelson.
I should let Leanne write the headlines here. That'd be fantastic.
Lord Peedle Mandhandelson.
So this guy is a Labour. He was in the Blair government, and he's been an advisor to Keir Starmer. He was ambassador to America for a while, but just an absolute shit. You know, the kind of person who was getting regular payments from Epstein. It turns out Epstein was friends with a lot of people. There were the high and the mighty, the great and the good, at his house begging for money, holidays, sex with minors, pretty much everything you can imagine. And he was just moving.
He was dishing them out.
Oh man, was this guy into?
He was like, he had a money machine of yeah. Russian prostitutes,
and, bam, bam, bam. And a money machine of money, because he paid for so many things. So it turns out he was chums with princes and presidents, and apparently even the Clintons are going to have to go and testify.
Yes,
closed well, circuit Bill situation.
Bill's got more air miles on his plane than Gary Player has on things with wings.
Yeah. No, that is true. I mean, we always knew, what do they call him? It's not Slippery Bill. Slick Willie. That's what they call him. Yes, add that right. to your headline list. Hi, I'm Slick Willie. And Crooked Hillary is going to have to testify as well, because she also is mentioned several times. So Trump does come up, because people... Somebody the other day said to me, oh, what do you think of your friend Trump being in? First of all, he's not my friend. I've never met the man. And if I've said some things that make you think that I would want to be bosom buddies with him, it's never going to happen. He's a what, 78-year-old man who's been president of the United States twice. He's not my friend. I don't like politicians. I like a lot of the things he's done. But these people thought that by bringing Epstein into the discussion, this is on social media, so I don't know who this is. They're like, oh, what do you think of your friend Trump being involved in the Epstein files? I'm like, out of all the people in there, he doesn't come out so badly. Did you see Elon also turned down?
Yes, Elon's in there too.
Elon was sent an email. He's like, I don't want to come to your shitty party or whatever it was that he was doing. Jacob Gedlitlake Zuma. But we knew he would be friends with Epstein. Come on.
We knew it.
We knew that Jacob Zuma, Silvio Berlusconi, the former Prime Minister of Italy, President of Italy, he was the one who had the Bunga Bunga parties, remember?
Yes.
And he and Zuma were also close friends. Yes,
Berlusconi said, no, I'm not coming to your shit party. I've got better wine. I've got better women. He didn't care.
But Jacob Zuma went to New York on, I think he was president at that stage, a presidential visit, and his assistant sent Epstein an email saying, you know, maybe we can involve some glamorous girls. Mm. So Epstein said, I can make that happen.
So, what do you think happened with the Nati and Tetua thing? Because there was a clip of him on the plane with two girls.
Yes.
He famously Hillary'd himself in Paris.
Yeah, he jumped off the top of that building.
Well, I mean, no. Did he jump or was he?
Was he pushed? Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know, Ben. I mean, what I'm interested in here is what was Epstein getting in return and who was he passing on that information to? You know, there are lots of people who say he was. Well, there are people who say that he was a CIA operative, that he worked for the intelligence services in America.
I don't believe that.
There are people who say that he was an agent of Mossad, the Israeli intelligence services. There are people who say that he had connections to the World Economic Forum and many other places, that he was influencing. I mean, the one example that is concrete is Peter Mandelson.
Peter Mandelson.
Who went and tried to influence policy in the UK when it came to, like, bankers.
Wankers and the likes thereof.
Leanne.
Sorry.
Bankers who wanted to be paid bigger bonuses. There was legislation pending that would have prevented that from happening. And apparently, Epstein said to Mandelson, listen, your part of the deal is that you've got to stop this this legislation that's going to reduce the amount of money that bankers can pay themselves. So that is a finite example of what he was actually trying to achieve. And I don't think we're going to find out that he was in charge of the world or that he was trying to, manipulate a new world order, because I don't think that stuff happens at any level. I think people are in it for themselves. They're trying to get ahead. They're trying to survive. They're trying to manipulate things in places. I don't know how much more, especially for the conspiracy theorists, the ones who are truly convinced that there was some Machiavellian plan that was masterminded and that he was the central tent peg, this Jeffrey Epstein. You know, people seem to like, especially a lot of people who have no agency, they seem to really like the idea of being able to blame someone else because their life isn't going the way that they want it to. And if you can blame it on some universal global conspiracy and people like Epstein, then you have an excuse. You don't have to be responsible.
Like Dr. Hanan will tell us, you want things to fit and make sense and be easy to understand.
Yeah.
So even if you force it to be that way.
Guys, I feel like I'm on a Zoom call. I put my hand up. But I think if we want to...
Sorry, Ben, you had a question?
Yes. Thanks, Leanne. I'm going to circle back to your point in a second. Something that we could do with all this information is not just look at it in isolation. We must watch movies like Devil's Advocate and Eyes Wide Shut again, because there's little like breadcrumbs throughout these kind of things and behaviors, because everything's patterned, right?
Yeah.
And now, these people are all involved with this Jeffrey Epstein guy who could be Al Pacino's character in The Devil's Advocate. He could actually be Satan. And then you look at what these people do when power is involved and with like impulse controls out the window and entitlement is through the roof. I mean, that Deepak Chopra, that guru guy, he was all about the just trying to be hammering young girls.
Was he also in there?
Passively. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is there anybody who saw in the Epstein files, or if you've paid attention to them? Because it's a lot of material, huh? There are thousands of emails. Millions of emails. Yeah. So is there anyone in there who surprised you? Is there anyone you thought, that's a bit of a disappointing thing? I mean, obviously in the previous release, which wasn't much of a release, they told us about Stephen Hawking, which I was surprised by.
Mm.
But I haven't really seen anyone here that I wouldn't have... I mean, Jacob Zuma, I'm not surprised he's on the list, but it's cool that we, South Africa, got a mention. And your question, Ben, about Natim Tetwa, who knows what the link is? You reckon it could be actually that there's quite a lot going on here, and you do need to look for the breadcrumbs, and there is a bigger story. You've always said that there are all these deviants and pedophiles in Hollywood, and I mean, you just have to watch the awards shows to see how deviant most of these people are.
Gareth, this was 10 years ago that we were talking about pedos running the world, and not just for laughs either. And now it's all coming out. Like that Pizzagate thing, which was pushed under the carpet by Big Mike and Barack, that's a thing. And if we just keep looking at these patterns, we'll see all of that. Because, another thing is that when these people are put into this list, I think some of them aren't exactly the worst people in this world. When you're rich and you're famous and you know everybody, you go to a lot of parties, right? Remember back in the day of the Playboy Mansion? It was very glamorous to go to Hugh Hefner's house. It was the place to be. Sure, it was a bit creepy that all these old guys were there, but it's what celebrities did, okay? It was a rite of passage. You're famous. You have more value in society. You will see girls' boobs. That's how it worked. Mm-hmm. And people who obviously got invited to that got invited to Epstein as well, because, hell, why wouldn't you want to go to these cool places where all these young people are? And then it got seedy. So I think some of them got into the net, not with the worst intentions. And then some of them obviously are utter creeps and sex predators. So I think you shouldn't paint everyone with the same brush, obviously. It's fun too, and that's what people end up doing. But I don't think everyone who's going to appear on that list is an absolute creep. Like Elon went to a few parties, and then he's like, nah, it's not for me. But I don't think he was just going to go and try Prince Andrew himself.
I also think, just because someone's mentioned in there, there could be some arbitrary person who nobody expected to see. That doesn't mean that they were necessarily going to the island and having sex with underage girls.
At one
of
these parties, not with no prior knowledge.
Yeah,
my aunt was on Diddy's boat for her 40th on his yacht.
Is this the one who had the stroke?
No, my mom had the stroke.
No, hang on. Just your aunt. Just hold.
She's related.
You can't just drop it. Wait,
she married
give
into
me a minute.
The Kennedy family, Gareth.
No, hang on. So she was on Diddy's yacht.
She married into the Kennedy family. She had spent her 40th on Diddy's yacht.
With him there?
Yes. With no prior knowledge of all the shit that's related to Diddy. You could easily end up at one of these parties.
Did he pitch up with a whole lot of baby oil and say, hey, baby, we all have a time?
You know what? Since the Diddy thing exploded, I've never asked her questions. I've never drilled her about the party.
You should.
But she phoned me from his yacht.
Wow.
Said, you'll never guess where I am. I am on P. Diddy's yacht, yo.
That's wild.
You can go to, and she's certainly not a pedophile into oil, into weird shit.
Hey, I mean, this is the first time you mentioned it. I thought nothing of her before.
So you can end up at these parties and have your photo pushed out there and not have had any prior knowledge.
Yeah, it's a little harder when you're like Prince Andrew and you've been mates with the guy for a long time, you know.
Oh, remember, yeah. No,
and especially like once you find out that the guy is a dodgy son of a bitch, then you stop being friends with him. You know, this is where, I mean, Andrew went and stayed at his apartment in New York after he'd been convicted. So you've got to choose your enemies and choose your friends once you have enough information. And I mean, your aunt's case is a good example with P. Diddy because she didn't know.
No idea.
But if she'd known what she knows now,
yeah,
she would have been like, no, thank you. I don't want to go on that. Yeah. Which is precisely what many of the people did with Epstein. They sidelined him. After a while.
Yes,
I mean, some
exactly.
of them it took a long time. You know, some of them were like, no, 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 he's a good guy. We don't believe any of that stuff. Mm.
But there were repeat offenders, the likes of sure. Bill Gates.
Yeah, Bill.
Who was asking advice from Epstein.
About an STD.
On how to secretly
treat
his wife's STD from
right.
the prostitute.
Bill Gates.
And she's been interviewed since.
I know, and she said.
She said, there were a number of reasons.
She said, but I just find it all so sad.
Ben has a question.
Yes, Ben, go ahead on Zoom.
All right, guys, another question here. Why do you think the medium
was... Should
we
ask Ben to save his questions for the end of the call?
Go on.
Why do you think the media was email? Because it seems a bit strange how all of this kind of stuff has come up by email. Like, I don't email my mates things like what's happening this weekend. Oh, let me email you about this club we're going to. It's very much a strange sort of thing that it's all being standardized on that. And that's where it gets a bit fishy for me. Because firstly, Hillary's very good at destroying emails. So that might not stick in court.
Yeah.
But secondly, it's almost like it was prearranged so that everybody could have the same sort of look. And that is a bit odd.
But remember, that's what our medium was back in the day. Remember, we used to send memes
via email
to each other.
Yeah, it was BBM. Fair point.
What years are we talking about here? Because if it was prior to 2008 when he was convicted, then I don't think WhatsApp was a thing yet.
No.
Yeah, text definitely was. Text is a big thing.
I remember we used to send 50 emails a day just of memes, like of a chimp scratching his ass and smelling his finger. That was a whole email.
Yeah, okay.
Anton, did he see your chimp scratching their asses? you're on form today, Leanne.
Imagine Leanne's art going, hey, Mr. Peter Diddy, look at this email my niece just sent me about.
Now it just feels like a fever dream.
apparently, the Dalai Lama is in the files. That's according to Bitcoin, but that's. Wow. There's someone I didn't expect to see in the files. But Melinda Gates, yeah. I mean, I always thought Bill was just a bit of a, you know, you always got to watch these people who are just too slick. There's just too much going on there.
Now, there's something that I raised a while ago when we spoke about that pedophile village.
Where was this?
Remember, there's a village in the US where they've
put all the pedophiles
in caravans.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And just how how common pedophilia is in that mindset and how it's an actual chemical thing that happens in your brain.
I spoke to a psychologist about this once, that it's almost like people who have these very weird kinks and you know that nothing else turns them on
yes.
or gets them excited.
But
so
now we're calling them weird, and as if it's an anomaly. But look how widespread it is.
Look, again, we don't know who was into the underage girls, who was just into prostitutes. You know, I think when you operate at the level that so many of these people who were involved with Epstein, when you operate at that level, it's very hard for you to find a way of covertly doing what you want to do. So we always assume the worst. We assume, well, all these people in the files were all on the island cavorting with, like, hopelessly underage girls. And I don't know that that's true. We don't know who matches up where with what. Because Epstein also, there were these very weird conversations he was having with doctors about, like, essentially transing a whole lot of young girls or boys so that they had different equipment.
Wow.
It was almost like they were like Dr. Moreau's island, where, you know, if you wanted a chick on the top but a guy below or whatever, okay, he could kind of make that happen as well. There's some twisted stuff here, and not everybody went and said, oh, you only have these on the menu. Well, that's luckily all I want. It was like he was pretty much a concierge service for all of the most deviant, again, weird people.
We're using the language deviant,
weird. I know, but they are, Leanne.
But we said that about gay people too.
No. Don't go down the slippery slope, if you don't mind my saying, where you end up equating what is considered. I mean, I'll read your story quickly, and Ben will hate this story as much as I do. Listen to this. So apparently, this is in the news this week, a man named Ben Ford left his wife. That's a bad start, right? He left his wife after forming a sexual relationship with his biological mother.
Oh.
Kim, yeah, okay, right. Now, you know that ugh that you just did? That ugh is the same ugh I have when I hear about, like, Epstein Island. Because it is deviant.
And then
this is not normal. Your biology should rebel against this. There's a reason when you put pedos in jail, everyone else in the jail just wants to. You got all the worst people in the world, and they're like, fuck that. You're not putting those weirdos in here.
And then when you visit, like, a very generalized porn site, nothing special, like YouPorn, it's flooded with stepmother shit and step.
Yeah, exactly. Because people have those kinks. Look,
there kinks if it's I just don't know where the line is.
We know people are weird, and we don't know which ones are as weird as we expected them to be. But this guy, just let me read the story to you. This is just unbelievably disturbing. So the pair claimed their relationship was not incest, but genetic sexual attraction, arguing that their bond formed due to lost early intimacy. Because obviously what happened was she had him as a son, and then she gave him up for adoption.
Okay.
And then they found each other later in life, and they fell in love or whatever. Apparently, they say, despite incest being illegal and carrying severe legal penalties and genetic risks, they plan to marry and have children, though it is unclear whether the relationship continued or resulted in marriage. So we don't know what's happened to them since the story broke, but there are severe penalties just biologically, just genetically for this kind of behavior.
Take away the law. If they have children, it's likely that they will see the consequences.
They'll be a disaster. And if you are not the kind of person who understands implicitly that children should not be predated upon, that children need to be protected, and certainly that young girls under the age of, 16 is consent in most places or whatever, that those girls are not – it is not appropriate for old men to be preying upon them, right? I mean, this is what good societies do. That's why you get successful societies and you get unsuccessful ones. So I think there's an element of, like, what is just naturally abhorrent to us. Mm. And this story that I've just read you about this guy dating his mom and being sexually attracted to his mom.
Feels repulsive.
It's gross, you know?
Yeah, you just get shit people. Like, it goes back to, like, Caligula and all those kind of people. Everyone's got weird shit about them. The difference is what you do with them. Like, I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts this week, Finn versus History. And they always go through history purely so they can find out who had autism and who was a pedo. And it's very funny. But what are the things
autism that and pedophilia being equated here? Yeah, I just don't. Because I'm having such issues.
If you go back in history, you find out a lot of like dictators and like prominent people, they were mostly autistic. They were so far on the spectrum. And then they would like just shit on top of that. And what Finn was kind of getting to is that a lot of people are actually non-offending pedos. That's just because they know how to behave better. But deep down, so many people are like this. It's all within us. The difference is who does stuff about it. Like everyone's got fucking weird senses of humor and have weird ideas. Some people are perpetually suicidal but never commit suicide. We are all just so messed up in our heads anyway. But Gareth, I think you nail on the head. Better societies act on these things. Sorry, worse societies have no impulse control, no sophistication. And better societies realize that that is just not good behavior. And then we move on. And I think it's one of those things that gets lost on us, is that it's always our responsibility to behave better. That's all it is.
Yeah, don't be a shit. Like, you know, you could be, and think about some of these people. They were the most powerful people in the world at a time. And that doesn't mean you'd have a resurgence at some point. Maybe you'll disappear and people won't know it, but you'll be living a perfectly happy life. We don't know, but it just seems to me that it is so unnecessary to clutter your life up with, and maybe it comes from a deep-seated need to be important, to be relevant, to be famous for many of these people, to be famous, because a lot of them had money. It wasn't about money. Mm. They wanted to be loved by strangers. And I listened to a great podcast this week, Ben, not the one that you listened to about the autism and pedos, but I listened to this one where there was this guy talking about happiness and how to build reserves of true joy into your life, right? And he said one of the surefire ways, he's written a book called The Philosophy of Money, which has been an international bestseller. I think it's still on the top of the charts in most countries. This guy said, everybody who's poor, they fantasize about a life where they wouldn't have any bills to pay, where everything, they could afford anything they wanted, and they think their problems will disappear. And then there are people who wake up and have no purpose, and they think, if I just found something I could do that would change the world, and I could pour myself into everything, would be better. But he reckons one of the absolute guaranteed ways to make yourself unhappy, and we are all capable of doing this right now, you can switch this thing off, is to not fall into the trap of looking for the approval of complete strangers on the internet. Yep. Because we have such a twisted view of how the world works, thanks to social media, that we think, we automatically assume everyone else on the planet is doing better than us. Everyone else on the planet has more than us. Everyone else on the planet is more advantaged than we are in their skills, their talents, their place, their family, their day-to-day stuff. And it's not true.
It's such a default situation to put yourself in. My mom said something last night. She said, I was watching MasterChef.
She said, I can't believe your aunt went to Diddy's yacht.
She said, I was watching MasterChef and I felt like such a loser. No. We do this to ourselves every day, comparing ourselves. It's not only social media. It's been like that for years. What about magazines? What about girls who developed eating disorders because of magazines?
Yeah, but I mean, listen, there's Hanan. He's the one that should talk
to
your mother.
Please,
do you think Leanne's mother, Dr. Hanan, do you think that Leanne's mother should feel like a loser because she's watching MasterChef? I mean, I would say I'd say she's okay if that's one of her biggest worries.
Yeah, it's definitely your mother's fault for sure.
I'm going to tell her. Hold on.
All right, so tell us, Dr. Hanan, because we've got a thing, you know. James, I don't know if he talks to you every week or if he makes this up or whether he forces you to talk about the things he's personally trying to get over. But he's written down here that there is an obsession with protecting your peace. Now, is this something you care about, or is this something James wedged into the conversation because it's important to him?
You know, what is interesting is I've seen such a rise in these psychological lingers over the last couple of years. And actually, people use these terminologies to justify why they should stay in their comfort zone, you know, protecting my peace. And actually, I've taken some time to write down some of the lingo that I've heard over the last
couple of years. Before you even carry on, I do have to say to you that I've only ever heard "I'm protecting my peace" from two people, and they are two of the most awful people I've ever met in my life.
Middle-aged. What's your line?
Yeah,
you will love this. Gareth, you will love this. I think just strap yourself in.
Okay,
and
this is going
to
be fun.
Listen to this.
All right, let's go.
So, let's go. These are some of the terms that I've used, especially from the younger generation, to describe what they're going through. And I've never heard this before when they say, what does it mean, Hanan? I have no idea. So, obviously, the common one, narcissist, gaslighting, trauma bonding, energy vampires, I'm holding space, emotional dumping,
We got to slow down. Some of these are worth unpacking a little bit.
What's the vampire? I haven't heard the vampire thing.
Energy vampires. I know what that is.
Sucking your energy.
Yeah, that's those people who, like, they sit in the corner of the room and go, and they just make everything cuck. Okay. Everything. Right. Then what does it mean? What is someone fucking talking about when they say, "I'm holding space for this"? What is that? That doesn't sound like the thing that you're doing.
That's exactly. Like,
you're taking up space is what you mean. You're there, but we could have someone else there who's actually contributing. You're just taking up space. What is this bullshit that people have convinced themselves that just by existing, they're doing something?
So I guess I'm holding space is what the older generation would call "I'm just standing." It's the new age version.
All right. So
we're giving credit to you, a daily function, a bodily function, just standing.
Yeah, well done. Let's give them the Nobel Peace Prize because you managed to fucking hold space. And this year's Oscar goes to Gareth Cliff for holding space. All the other actors are like, what the fuck? Unbelievable. What? Come on, keep going. This is good.
Yeah, you'll love these ones. This one is very used very often. Inner child work. I'm doing inner child work.
Ugh.
So was Prince Andrew.
Emotional.
Yeah, exactly. That was what Epstein was up to. Good point, Ben. I'm just doing some inner child work. Fucking pedo.
Oh, no.
Emotional triggers, protecting my peace. I'm protecting my peace. That's another common one that I hear.
That's James's one, right? That's what he always says.
Mm.
You know, sometimes when I say to him, "James, it's Thursday afternoon. I don't know who the guest is on tomorrow's show. And what's the lineup?" And just give me a minute. I'm just protecting my peace. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. This is how he talks, Dr. Hanan. I'm sending him to you for a whole day, and you're gonna go around the twist with this guy. What else?
I'm sure you've heard of the attachment style, the different attachment style.
What's your attachment style? And then your
exactly.
Your
what's your
love
attachment
language?
Style exactly?
What's your love language?
Exactly. I'm doing,
love
Gareth, you'll love this one. Leanne, listen to this. I'm doing shadow work.
What is that? Do you work for the CIA? You're a hairdresser, Mildred. You're not doing shadow work. You work in the fucking salon. That's what you do.
You groom dogs, Mildred. For fuck's sakes.
I'm just doing some shadow work. What are you? Please, man, you picking up the kids from school. Shut up.
When I see couples, I get a lot of soul level incompatibility.
No.
So,
what?
Yeah, exactly. exactly. Soul level incompatibility. So on a soul level, they're just not compatible.
Do you
I told you you got to strap in. Buckle up.
All right. So you hear these terms. Do you charge the people immediately? Extra. Just charge them extra because this is going to be taxing on you. Yeah, like you can have – maybe you shorten their appointment. You're like, okay, I can see this person is just a tumble dryer of nonsense. I'm going to leave them out.
It should be like a swear jar if they bring up – then they have to pay a penance. It's like once – when my cousin was waxing me, I farted, and she charged me extra. She actually charged me extra. It should be like a penance. I'm just putting it out there.
Dr. Hanan is holding back the vomit. What a story. All right.
Was it intentional, or was it just slip out?
No, totally by mistake.
Why did you take Ben off the screen there, James? Are you anti Ben?
No, I'm back. Sorry, I had to switch because I was in agony. But that was funny.
These terms are really, really bad. Are there any others you want to throw in?
No. So the point is actually the people just must be really careful about using these terms to justify staying in their comfort zone and not stepping out. And the reality is that the more you use these terms to justify staying in your comfort zone, the thicker you will get. Human nature is about growing, but you don't grow when things are going well. You grow when you actually find discomfort. And discomfort is found outside of your comfort zone. So I'm doing shadow work or protecting my peace or, you know, toxic masculinity. Therefore, I'm not prepared to engage the outside world. It's just keeping you in a comfort zone at the cost of growth and self-development and good mental health. So don't use any terms. Any terminology to justify why you should stay in your comfort zone.
Yeah, love it. I hate those terms, but I love that. All right, Dr. Hanan, have a very happy weekend and good Shabbos. And we will see you next week, Friday. Yeah, Ben, have you got some sport for us? Because we don't want to run out of time before you have to go and hit the golf course. So let's get into the Winter Olympics.
It starts today. Yes.
Listen,
oh, damn, now, exciting.
Leanne's about to ask about the...
I was trying to watch the Winter Olympics last night and I couldn't. Is it true that DSTV is not showing it?
No, that's nonsense. It's absolutely showing it. It's a major event. This is what people are really excited about. You must have just had a bad night, Leanne.
Thanks.
Maybe you farted while they were waxing.
True story. Yeah, and there was baby powder involved.
Oh.
I mean, the Winter Olympics is cracked on. So what happens now with Olympics, because the schedules are so obviously packed, before the opening ceremony, there is quite a lot going on. So curling, for example, they are curling the crap out of it right now, and it will do all weekend. So if you're a big curling fan, right out of the blocks, that's a big thing. So the opening ceremony will be tonight from the San Siro Olympic Stadium. Mariah Carey is going to be performing, which is hugely exciting for everybody.
It's lovely they'll wheel out Mariah Carey for this. I mean,
What do you reckon the songs are going to be? Because we're 2 months late for her biggest song.
Yeah. she hasn't even recovered from Christmas yet.
So I reckon we should take bets on it. I reckon she's going to bust out Hero. Probably a good one.
That's a good one.
What else?
I don't think Always Be My Baby is going to make an appearance there. Fantasy, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Fantasy, but what is funny about Mariah is that she charges a huge amount of money and makes minimal effort. So she's probably going to come out onto the stage. In a tracksuit. She'll be like, get the band going. She'll have 10 backup singers who can all actually do the singing. And then she'll go, and she'll sit down. That's what's going to happen.
No, you're so right. She'll hit that one high note that gets the dogs listening, and then she'll just sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, guys, so Winter Olympics. I mean, we've been very excited about this. On the Bounce Show this week, we go through every event. We go through the history of the games. It's a really interesting show. So if you want to, like, bone up on anything Winter Olympics orientated, on the Bounce Show, we've got a full hour for you. Dimitri joins Shaz and I. It was one of the most fun shows we've done in quite some time. But obviously, there's a Cricket World Cup starting as well this weekend, Gareth. So it's a bit of a weird one because it's a T20 World Cup and we've already had so much T20. So for some people, it's the greatest thing that we had to step up. For some people, it might be a little bit of overkill. We didn't talk about this last week, but you know, there's four pools. The top two from each pool go through into a Super 8 sort of structure. And then that's where you get the semis and the finals. So this weekend, we're going to kick off with Pakistan versus the Netherlands. And something to look out for in this tournament, there's some pretty fruity teams. I mean, Italy's even playing. Oman's in there. Nepal. So West Indies take on Scotland at 11:30. Interesting facts. Bangladesh decided to pull out because they thought that India wasn't safe enough. I think they don't like guys pooing on the streets. They don't like the opportunities that camel cats have of maybe roaming their cars off the road. I think it's a bit unfair. I think what India does for cricket is incredible. If it wasn't for India, we wouldn't have cricket on the scale that we have right now. So Bangladesh is shooting themselves in the foot. It's a very strange call. But Scotland have jumped to it. They've come in at the expense of Bangladesh, who just aren't interested in going to India. They don't want to eat, pray, love. They do not like them. They're not going. And then we've got India versus USA at 3:30 on Saturday. So these games are going to range from like 7 in the morning until the afternoon our time here in SA. Sunday, we've got New Zealand versus Afghanistan. Now, this is a massive Group D game. Now, Group D is where South Africa is, and it's a bit of a group of death. These are the strongest teams. So Afghanistan, they love a bit of T20. T20 in the subcontinent, even more so. So they're going to be dangerous. Now, it's nice to be able to say Afghanistan is going to be dangerous and only talk about sport, and that's what the reality is there. Sunday at 11:30, England will be taking on Nepal, Sri Lanka versus Ireland after that, and then SL left the first time on Monday against Canada. Yes, Canada, which is mostly just made up of expats from other countries that like spin bowling, to be honest with you. The Six Nations started last night in a very French kind of act. They started on Thursday, which makes no sense, but you know, the French are going to be the French. And I think it goes without saying that the Springboks broke the Irish last year when we actually manhandled them in the scrum. Because yesterday they were useless against France. France beat them 36-14. Many thought that this was going to be the decider for the Six Nations, as in game one, the two best teams in the last few years in the tournament. But this opens it up for England now. You know, England, obviously a second-ranked team in the world. They are on a great trajectory. So Ireland, well, they can cry early this time around. You know, serial bottlers, they never really win anything important. Saturday's games remaining, Italy will take on Scotland at 4:10, and then England versus Wales, 10-7. It's England or France, and the other games are going to be a bit of a waste of time. Such a great week for football because the Carabao Cup final has been decided, Leanne. Manchester City will take on Arsenal, the two best teams in the Premier League, taking on each other to win the League Cup. So 22nd of March there, that'll be the big day at Wembley there. And it's the first time that the Arsenal men's team has made a final in 6 years. Something that James will point out at any given stage because they've done nothing. But this is the season. I've been saying it all season, hashtag tits. This is it, guys. This is the first final they could get into. This is the first final they are in. And, yes, they're also 6 points clear in the Premier League as well. So Premier League fixtures this weekend, not the most exciting.
Before you move off of Premier League, any word from Leanne's favorite team, Scunthorpe United?
No. Leanne doesn't take it seriously. She's calling Scunthorpe Ipswich in the same sentence.
You see. And nothing from Accrington Stanley either. Obviously not Premier League, but you know they're further down the table. But they're worth a mention, Ben. Nothing.
But are they, Gareth? What have they done for us recently? I mean, yesterday they beat Salford City 1-0, which was you know a good result. But they're languishing.
Salford
mid-table.
City.
It's all made up, Gareth. You know that.
It's kind of the place where you go buy nappies a little bit cheaper. That's what Accrington Stanley beat yesterday. So, I mean, look.
Like where the save guys, more is.
They're absolutely doing better. They're in League 2. They're currently 12th. They've only lost 10 times this season. They've won 12. I just think they should step up a little bit. I just think that they rely far too much on the FA Cup of days gone by and that little kid who drank the milk. But yeah, just to wrap up there, the Premier League for the weekend, Man United are now a resurgent team. You talk to Man United fan, they are so happy. They interim FC, they've beaten teams. They've won three in a row now. There's a guy who has grown this afro, which is like out here.
Yeah.
And he said, until Man United win five games in a row, I'm not going to cut my hair. And this guy's hair is literally its own atmosphere. But now they've won three in a row. So now this guy's so excited because they've got two shitty teams to beat. I mean, they've got to beat Spurs, and then I think they've got to beat like Burnley or some other shit team. So this guy might actually have a haircut for the first time in like 4 years.
There was a Colombian footballer called Carlos Valderrama who also for a long time. I remember he was a major character on the scene, and I think ended up, I don't know, drugs or something. You know, it's Colombia.
Yeah, this guy's got a double Valderrama on the go, and it's an interesting look. So, yeah, Man United will take on Spurs. Spurs somehow drew with Man City last week, which was great for Arsenal. So, Spurs, shout out, well done. They were useless in the first half. Suddenly, they came back like a championship team in the second half. So, this actually could be quite a good game. I mean, these two famously played for the Europa tag-along lead last year, and Spurs won the trophy, and then Spurs fans will tell you, oh, they're European champions. It's like, yeah, not really. Arsenal will then take on Sunderland at 5. This will be a good game. Arsenal at home needs to sort of kick on a bit. Wolves will take on Chelsea. Chelsea is still trying very hard to get into that top four, as is Aston Villa. There'll be a way to Bournemouth at 5. And then Liverpool versus Newcastle at 10 o'clock Saturday night. So Liverpool are currently in 6th. If they don't make the top four, Arno's slots will probably be castrated. You know, you can't try to defend the Premier League and not finish in the top four. It's basically like farting in your therapist's lap. It's how it is, really. But the big game. Sorry, I absolutely cocked it up. Liverpool are not playing Newcastle. Sunday is the big game. I'm so excited about this. Liverpool are playing Man City.
So excited about it. James just about had an apoplexy. So who are they playing?
Sorry, James. Liverpool are playing Man City. I was just trying to get into it. This is actually the huge one. 6:30 on Sunday. Everything what I said about Liverpool top four still stands. But Man City as well, they are 6 points behind Arsenal. So they have to win this to try to stay in the title race. If Liverpool somehow win this one and Arsenal beat Sunderland, then it's 9 points. 9 points with 13 games to go is quite a mountain, considering Arsenal's run into the title isn't the hardest. I mean, Man City on 15th of April, I think it is their toughest game after that. So it's huge. Liverpool has to win this to try to stay, get into the top four. Man City has to win this to try to stay in the actual Premier League. So, yeah, guys, it's as good as it gets, really. That is your sport for the weekend. There's obviously lots of golf on, as always. Liv Tour is back there in Riyadh at the moment. Just so much, and it's exciting. And the Winter Olympics is finally here.
There's a whole other world out there, hey?
Look at this, Leanne. Yeah. By the way, I've got a great story for you, Ben. You may wish to check this out yourself on the Times newspaper, that says, why Peter Mandelson, Leanne's favorite politician, would make a great FIFA president.
my gosh.
That tells you everything you need to know, right?
Oh, goodness me.
What a guy.
Yeah. What a guy.
Ben's run out of words.
All right, Ben, we will see you next Friday. Have an excellent time in Sun City. Before you go, we have to talk about whether this thing that you're going to show us now is a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel or not.
Now, this picture comes with an entire story.
Well, do you want to tell us that before the picture or do you want to show the picture?
Let's show the picture.
All right, show the picture and then we will... Oh, for God's sake, you've had all morning.
Okay. Well,
really?
Maybe I'll tell you the
story.
You know,
James, I've got to protect my peace, and I've got to fire you in the next 3 months. Otherwise, my peace is not protected.
Gareth's love language is getting the fucking picture ready.
Exactly. So I was looking at my Cavalier King Charles Spaniel last night.
Is she getting
so
on?
Fucking cute, man. She's 4. She turned 4 on the 1st of February.
No, hold on.
Yes. What hold on? She wasn't on Diddy's boat with your aunt.
I thought she would be older.
No, 4 years old. She's 4.
Okay.
And just the cutest thing in the world. Such attitude. She's discovered the air conditioner in the car, which is a very happy place for her to sit. Oh. The ears blowing back and everything. Very, very happy puppy. Very spoiled.
Mm.
But these are, I mean,
and
I just,
she does get to play with her cousins.
Oh yeah. She was with, Millie, who's my parents' dog. She was with my sister's corgis the other day. So yes. she has lots of friends. She has a very active social life for a dog. Not as active as your aunt, but, you know, I mean, she's busy. Have you got that picture? Oh, there it is. Oh.
Is it? You know?
People used to collect these, right?
It's big. I must tell you, it's quite big. It's about this.
Is it yours?
No.
Oh.
I ended up staying in a guest suite this week.
So people used to collect these. They used to be quite valuable.
Is it meant to be a King Cavalier?
I think it's meant to be, yeah.
There it is with its
face. But what a disappointment. Here I was thinking you're going to show me a cute puppy and you show me these disgusting.
No, I just thought, I saw it and I thought, I have to ask Gareth if this is meant to be.
So this is not yours?
No, I was in a guest suite.
Oh. Where, on Epstein Island?
Funnily enough,
where is that?
My own property.
Really?
It's very bizarre. But yes.
No, so your property is so huge, you don't even know what's on
there.
It's
not my property. I'm a renter. But
all right. So
yes.
Why do you ask? Because.
No, because I saw it. I was getting into bed, looking, admiring the decor, and I saw this porcelain dog, and I thought, I need to ask Gareth if that is meant to be a.
You know, I find. Okay, it's fairly disturbing because they don't look like that. If they looked like that, no one would want them as pets.
If you were sleeping in a guest suite and you woke up and that
wouldn't
was looking
be, I
at
wouldn't
you.
Be thrilled with it. Let me just put it that way. I would not be thrilled with that. But they're very cute dogs. Mm-mm. That's not a cute representation.
Okay.
But just it's still better if you have to sleep in a guest suite and those are there. It's better than like a freaky porcelain doll.
Okay.
Of a human. Agreed?
Right. So now we know where they fit in the.
Yeah, that creepy human porcelain doll that has eyes that look very real, that stare at you. Definitely top of the list for things that won't make me sleep comfortably in a guest suite. And way down are those.
Okay, so not too offensive.
But you'll find if you look those up, I don't know what you would call them, porcelain dog or whatever, they used to be quite a valuable. Yes, people pay a lot of money for those things.
I remember my grandparents had a life-sized Doberman. No, what are those things called? Dalmatian.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a collector of these things, but apparently they can fetch quite a good price.
Interesting.
So people collect all kinds of weird stuff.
There you have it.
So, yeah, very, very exciting. All right. The other thing that you wanted to talk about this morning, which I'm always excited about when Leanne brings me a list of things that she I need to get these things off my chest. So this morning, the cheesy results are in. What does this mean? Well, it means that the 25-year study has found an unexpected link between cheese and dementia. Yes. If you think you're going demented, you may well be, and it could have something to do with either too much cheese or a lack of cheese. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Which do you wish? Are you not really a foodie?
Well.
But, I mean, a lot of people feel very strongly about cheese.
Cheese is
like if they don't have cheese in their life.
Are you kidding? It's porcelain Cavalier King Charles Spaniels or cheese for people. Those are the things they care about.
So, good news, cheese lovers.
Jesus Christ, what?
Well, adults without a genetic risk for Alzheimer's.
Okay, that's got to do with something on chromosome 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
Eating a more full-fat cheese.
Yes.
Has been associated, and this is a very good study, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
With a noticeably lower risk of developing Alzheimer's if you eat more cheese.
But if you don't have the genetic predisposition.
They've put predisposition aside. People who are not genetically predisposed to having Alzheimer's,
okay,
who ate a more full-fat cheese diet,
right,
had less chance of developing Alzheimer's. And this is actually a massive study. It's a Swedish study,
yeah,
tracking nearly 28,000 people. So it's huge for 25 years.
It's been very thorough from the Swedes.
So I would say, right, reduced dementia risk overall, yes, a decades long diet of low fat.
So you're saying eat more cheese.
Eat more cheese, people.
Huh. Mashani, do you agree with this?
I fully agree. I'm a big lover of cheese. So, Leanne, put it in my mouth, child. I'm not complaining. That sounds good.
You know that Mash was in the Epstein files as well.
I don't know how much
he was
Epstein.
The only child who volunteered to go to the island.
Hey, he pitched up with his like little his armbands on. Like, okay, please take me.
The joke's over now. So, Mash, I do have a very, very urgent discussion. One of the reasons I said to James, he better be on the show this week.
Okay.
I have been watching you on social media, and you have been causing untold trouble. You have now become one of South Africa's biggest anti-fat people, and it's not all working for you. I also didn't realize that – well, I realized. Some other people in the office didn't. That person in some of your videos, that's your brother.
Yes, that's my little brother.
You were calling him fat, forcing him to go to gym. Listen, I'm in favor. I mean, you know I'm a fan.
100%.
I think all the things that you're doing are absolutely spot on. But we have to talk about this video. James, please roll the tape so that everybody who watches the show can see what we're talking about before we get into the reads. Oh, my God, James. One more second. You know... It's really time to get new help, don't you think?
Yeah, it's time.
It's definitely time. By the way, a couple of comments here before we play that clip. Some comments from people in the comments section, which is very lively, as you know, Leanne. They say, not that I know of, but if that's the case, RIP. What is this all about?
Hey, boy.
Get Leanne on the chat so that we can talk about something else here while the sports hour happens. Maybe that's what we should do, is put you on
the chat.
Yes.
That's a good idea. Put Leanne into the chat while people who don't care about sport go on there. I can do that. All right, so here it is. Here's the clip of Mash, and then we'll get back to the comment section afterwards. We need to talk about. All right, what do we say, Leanne?
Yeah, that's so true. Guys in gyms without everyone's no one's batting an eyelid.
Well, I think
everyone's being sexual with the machines.
There are three things that are worthy of discussion here. First of all, that you're quite right. There are people who behave inappropriately at gym.
100%.
Or at least give you like side eyes or
and looks.
Yeah, there are people who only watch themselves at the gym too, right?
100%.
And not in a, let me just check that I'm doing these moves. They're almost like in love with themselves. You can see it, right? There's that. Then there's Mash thirst trapping the fuck out of the internet, which he's clearly doing.
Opening shots. Oh, right there.
Big time. I mean, you start with the pelvic thrust. So are you kidding me?
Gareth, I'm single at the end of the
day. But are you getting a lot of attention from what you're doing here?
I am getting quite some attention. But unfortunately, there's one thing I've come to realize. As I've lost weight and, you know, I've as a result of my losing weight, become more attractive, people just don't approach me anymore. People don't...
Are they intimidated?
No, like, Gareth, there's nobody. There's nobody approaching me. Even my DMs, there's nobody.
Really? They've all gone dry?
They've gone dry. Hundreds of thousands of likes on posts, but nobody in the DMs.
So despite you doing pornographic material like this on your channel, you're not getting the interest. What do you think?
It's like a phenomenon as well where you will see a really, really attractive, as a woman, I will see a really attractive girl, like a model. She's a model.
Yeah.
You know she's a model.
Yes.
In no world are you going to say, you know, you're really beautiful. Because you know she knows that already. Wow. She's been paid for it. Or people have told her that
so
her whole life.
So who do you compliment? The moderate people?
Yes.
That's the thing.
The ones who show up a little bit better than they did the day before.
Oh.
It's like, today you look really nice.
Yeah. So in other words,
yesterday you looked shit.
I'm just interpreting Leanne here.
Models are not getting compliments.
If you're getting a compliment from people
<We're>
like...
<not. laughs>
if you're getting a compliment from people like Leanne... You're actually kind of ordinary.
Yeah.
She's just trying to make you feel a bit better. But if you're really hot, she's just going to ignore you.
You're not going to tell somebody who looks really good that they look really good because you think that they
if
know.
If I see someone in real life, not on the internet, if I see someone in real life and they look phenomenal, I mean, Pearl Tusi was here in the office the other day because she's got a show here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus, you're not going to – when that woman walks past you, and she is a beautiful woman. Ooh. When she walks past you or says hello to you in the corridor or whatever, you're going to go, you're looking fine.
Absolutely.
Right? Because she deserves – not because she's genetically predisposed to be prettier than every other person, but because she's dressed up, she's like got the hair did. I look at her and I go, you deserve a compliment.
I think maybe
you, I just want to say you, Leanne, you withhold your compliments from the wrong people and you dish them out to the wrong people.
I've kind of come to realize that people just don't do it. Maybe this applies to Pearl Tusi in particular, because also Pearl Tusi is like a household name. You know, you see Pearl Tusi, you already know her.
Hey,
so that barrier is kind of...
You got hundreds of thousands of likes on your stuff. Mashiane Sefuti is also a household name now. Are you really not getting the attention you were hoping for? So you went to all this trouble, Mash. You lost the weight. You're going to the gym. You're eating right. You're opinionated as hell on social media. And none of it's working?
None of it has worked. It's just it's chased people away from me now. In fact, I get less attention than before. And
I think maybe it's jealousy.
I don't know.
Sometimes it's weird when a person has gone through such an enormous physical change.
Yes.
Sometimes it's a bit like... I don't know. Humans react a bit differently to it. It's like, what the hell?
But you won't turn around and get fat again.
No, I'm not planning on doing it.
It's like Leanne's not going to pick up the cigarettes again.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
So you two here's the point that I made to just before Dr. Hanan came on this morning. If you're on an upward trajectory and that makes people who were on a downward trajectory feel bad, that doesn't mean you should go backwards to please them.
No.
100% you can't.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is, you really are looking terrific.
Yes,
and it seems to me like you're enjoying this stuff a whole lot.
So much.
Right?
For the first time, I don't care what people think of me.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's power, man.
And the main reason why I'm always pushing people online and being kind of mean is because from experience, one thing I've learned is that when your hormones are in check, when you get your hormones in check, as a guy in particular, when your testosterone goes high, when your cortisol goes low, you become a machine. You go after your goals. You can approach people in public settings. You have a new lease on life. You have this kick in your step. And you feel like there's no barrier
this guy's on fire
in
this
front
morning.
Of you.
I love this. No, I'm very impressed, Mash. I mean, I'd prefer if you did slightly less X-rated stuff. I mean, OnlyFans is an old chapter of yours that you gave up when you were fat. You don't need to go back there.
I'm not going to be going back there.
I mean, it's completely uncalled for you to be doing the hip thrusts and things. Especially if it's not working, dude, to get you the attention you're looking for.
It's not working. So I'm just going to stop it.
I do want to quickly just divert in a very minor way to the comments section, because there's a whole conversation going on here. We haven't had a poll for a while, and people are calling for a poll here. Carl DeSantos, I'd like to start a petition to have James fired. Nobody heard the clip that you played of Mash. Embarrassing, James. Bitcoin Boot saying, start a poll if James should be fired or not. In fact, he's asking...
Was there audio on your clip?
It had audio. It had Dexter music.
See. From Dexter. All right, so James, just start a poll quickly about whether we should fire you or not. And you could put whatever options you like, as long as one or two of them are yes or no. You could put other options in too. Okay? It's like when women who were not attracted to you when you were single now find you attractive because you're married. That's what Vyasin says in the comments.
Yeah.
That's a similar thing.
That happens, hey?
Yeah.
As soon as somebody else sees value in someone, you see value in them too.
Yes.
100%.
And then it
What's
becomes,
that all about?
It's so weird. And then it also becomes a challenge to, I don't know, I'm not speaking for all women.
Oh.
But if a married man likes me over his wife and is willing to risk, it's like, it's weird. I don't know.
Yeah, listen.
It's what drives affairs and things.
I don't think we're ever going to crack the case of what how people operate, what makes them tick.
Mm.
Yeah.
But it is phenomenal. This thing that you just mentioned, Leanne, and I'm sure you've seen it plenty, Mash. This idea that when you could be around someone for years, but when somebody who you respect or admire takes an interest in them, suddenly you reevaluate them completely, right? I've seen this happen with people I know where they've kind of had an ambivalent attitude to somebody. But then when someone who they look up to thinks well of that person, they're like, oh, yeah, she's terrific, or he's great. I don't know how I didn't make a fuss of them before.
Certainly.
Hmm?
And it's just a case of, Gareth, I'm noticing this myself. The more successful you become in whatever field, the less people around you, they see that success. The people around you do not see that, unfortunately.
Well, I think we have an inbuilt mechanism where we default achievement upward. So in other words, we always assume, and maybe this happens in other places too, but certainly it's my experience that once you are at a certain level in your career and you're proficient in a certain thing, you could be the greatest engineer in your company, or you're the CEO of a small business, or whatever it is that you do. You could be a great nurse, doctor, personal trainer. It could be any of those things. But when you get to a certain level, then people forget that you worked really hard to get there. They just assume that's where you're at. That becomes your default. And you then have to really play out of your socks to impress them beyond that. It's like, that's the new level.
Yeah. That's definitely how it goes. And also, people don't want to see how hard you work. That's another thing. People don't actually want to see it. They act like they want to. Nobody wants to see Beyonce rehearsing. They just want to see the final thing on stage and dancing, and that's it. And they don't want to see that it took her freaking 2 years to learn this whole two-hour choreography. Nobody wants to see that.
Correct.
So that's the thing. And also, because people know you, they feel like, okay, we're on the same level. And the moment you start to excel at whatever, they start feeling like, okay, maybe we're not. But I don't know. It's like they're in denial. I don't know how to explain it. But it's a weird thing. And it's something that I've been researching. And have you heard of the term NPC? I'm sure you guys have.
Yes, non-player character, yeah.
Yes. So those are characters in video games that are automated. They're not AI. They're just automated characters. They just repeat whatever's in a script. They have no backstory. They have nothing. And NPCs are, I've come to realize that as I hate to say that I've been enlightened or awakened or whatever. But
yeah, but you've gone through a metamorphosis.
It's been insane mentally as well. And I've woken up to the fact that most people actually, before I get to my actual point, there's six levels of thinking I've come to learn, six different levels, and I'm going to break down these six levels. But most people are stuck at level one. Level one being remembering, which is basic recalling. You go to school, you learn things, you remember them, you write them down in a test, you forget them. It's basic recalling. Whenever you need that information, you'll access it. Level two is understanding. So it's taking a certain concept and then explaining it to someone else in your own words. That's level two. And then level three is applying. So taking whatever concept and being able to apply it in the real world. Mm-hmm. And then level four is analyzing, taking that concept and breaking it apart. So being able to compare, contrast, and find patterns.
I love this, by the way. Did you see a YouTube video on this or something?
Because I actually did see something
I mean, it sounds familiar to me, so I might have watched the same one.
Yes.
And it has to do with ways of thinking.
Certainly.
Right. So this could be about your interactions with other people, but it could just be your relationship with information as well.
Certainly.
Because these so far would make a lot of sense to people. Most people are just stuck at the remembering phase. They
don't even realize it.
They remember random or relevant facts.
But they're not doing anything with it.
They spit them out when they're asked at the coffee machine in the morning, but they don't really, they don't have an insight.
They've never questioned that fact.
So when you get to the analysis level, now you're starting to develop insight.
Yes.
Right? Because this is where people who, thanks to the internet and AI, we all have the first three.
Certainly.
You can find information. Mm. You can also deliver a kind of understanding of it. The third one was?
The third one is applying.
Applying. So, right? So you can apply this knowledge. And by the way, I've had it up to here. I had a conversation with someone yesterday about how everyone is using AI and not realizing that the rest of us know they're using AI.
Certainly.
If you get like an 8-page business plan or summary about something important at work, something that has to do with how you earn money, and you don't pick up in the first paragraph that someone has just put this through ChatGPT, I don't think you are using ChatGPT enough. Because you need to be aware of this. This is not work. These people are lazy sons of bitches who are letting the AI do the work for them. And AI can do the first three as well. AI can have memory. It can have understanding. It can apply and it can analyze. Yeah. So far, you're not providing anything that artificial intelligence won't be able to do better than you.
Yes.
So what comes after analysis?
So after analysis is evaluating the ability to judge and justify.
Uh-huh.
So to make decisions with reasoning, to evaluate, to justify, to recommend, to defend, and to recommend the most cost, for example, to recommend the most cost-effective packaging system and justify why.
And incumbent in that, and one of the reasons that humans now enter the picture, because AI tends to be programmed by people who are also not trying to offend anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get to judgment and evaluation, there's another word that comes in here, and it's not a popular word, but it is key to establishing your value over someone else's, and that is discrimination. Mm-hmm. You discriminate with your friends. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be friends with certain people.
Yeah.
Because you're discriminating. That's what the word is.
It's not a negative term.
No, it's
not. It's a function.
But machines, AI, machine learning is loath to do discrimination because it has a negative connotation. And the people who program these large language models don't want to discriminate.
Mm.
So it's been put in the negative category. But I'll tell you something. It gives you an enormous advantage. MASH discriminates against people who are overweight and don't do anything about it.
I'm not sure what that word.
You do. Yeah. You discriminate about who you want to date. You discriminate about who you want to do business with. Discrimination is a necessary aspect of getting ahead.
Yeah.
Mm. Certainly.
Okay, so that's evaluation. What's next?
Yes, and then the last one is number six, the highest level of thinking, and that is creating, building something new, innovation and synthesis. So being able to design, create, develop, and invent.
I'm so glad you brought this list up. I forgot that I'd watched this video, but I love it because if you can get to create, this is divinity. This is godliness.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that you're a god, but I'm saying if there is any godliness in you, it is bound to make itself available and evident to you when you're creating. Just think about how when you write something, when you make something with your hands, when you do something in the garden, these are things that make you feel like you're at the top of the pyramid.
And remember last week,
because you're doing incredible things.
Remember last week we said, we agreed that we'd never seen anything that AI had written that was, that made you laugh.
No.
It had no humor.
Yeah, AI.
It has no humor.
No.
Only a human can create that sort of thing.
Certainly.
And 100%. It's those... what did Bruno Mars call them? Perfect imperfections.
Yes.
Right? It's the fact that everything is not perfectly like these dumb caricatures that everyone's sending around to themselves right now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look like that.
It's only just started. Can you imagine?
But I'm not saying that if you look worse than your caricature, that doesn't make you attractive in real life. It may be a synthesis of all of the nonsense that the algorithm is putting together when it generates an image. And it may look a little bit like you, but the real you is bound to be better because you have quirks and eccentricities and nuances and weird tics that make you much more exciting than a perfected version of you ever would be.
It's almost as if this final step needs to have a little more meat around it, especially in the context, within the context of AI, because AI can create and it can be creative.
But what it has created
is so obviously false and so obviously AI created, whereas something that a human creates, whether it's a piece of literature or a line of humor, carries nuances that only a human could have created.
Yes.
All right. Well, Leanne, I know you need to go. But before you go, I want to show you this picture. This is a terrific this is a person called Melissa who says, don't get used to it. This site is 90% bigotry. And I want you to just, there's the picture.
Okay.
Just before you go, Leanne, any thoughts on Melissa over there?
I'm not sure. I think Melissa's watching me, number one. She's definitely watching me, and I feel uncomfortable saying anything in front of her.
Okay, and Commodore Amigo, I think, with the best comment I've seen on this picture. I can understand how you'd feel that way when you look like both a truck driver and the prostitute he just murdered simultaneously. Which is about right. So there we go. What a great picture. Leave that up for a while so people can really take it in, James. And thank you,
Ashley. As I take my leave, just a parting thought.
What a beautiful picture.
If you never give up, you might still not make it.
Thanks, Leanne. Okay. What a grown inspire. If you never give up, you might still not make it. Yeah. Just terrific. Such positivity this morning. All right. Very good. I do want to take the poll. Do you want to see whether people want to fire James?
Let's see.
Most people couldn't be bothered, but 64 votes in so far. Best producer ever. James, how many times have you voted?
Not once.
Lies. lies, all lies. So coming in with 40% of the votes so far, no best producer ever. Then 30%, what does he even do? Okay, that's in the negative category. I like those. Then 16%, who's James? And only 13% say fire him a long time ago. Why hasn't it happened yet?
Oh, wow.
Okay, thank you, James. We'll keep you then. For now, your job is safe.
Yeah, he's sticking around.
So, Mash, I'm glad you're here for this because I want to speak to someone called Jonathan Deal, who's on the line now. And we're going to talk about something which I think is on the minds of many South Africans. Mm-hmm. It's something that we all are forced to think about every day, whether we like it or not, because safety is a big issue, right?
Yes.
Crime is a big issue.
Oh, yes.
So Jonathan started something called the Treasure Karoo Action Group, which was established back in 2011 to oppose shale gas fracking in South Africa. He's a Goldman Environmental Prize winner. He's also the author of Timeless Karoo. But he's founded something called Safe Citizen, much more useful and interesting than all of this green bullshit that you're involved in here, Jonathan. But it's a civil rights group that's based in community safety and lawful firearm ownership, something that I've been a big advocate for as well, reflecting a strong commitment to environmental protection and civil liberties. Take us through the evolution of Safe Citizen and what you guys do, please.
Gareth, morning. Thanks.
Morning.
Really great to be on your show. And
pleasure to have you.
A really fascinating conversation that I've just listened to with you guys. A lot of takeaways there. Yeah.
Thank you.
What is Safe Citizen? Yeah. Basically, Safe Citizen was founded to provide a platform that could propagate a unifying ideology around community safety and security. And when I'm talking about developing a unifying ideology in South Africa, I think that for too long, government has been focused on keeping our community divided and controlled.
Yeah.
The opportunity that is presented for Safe Citizen, I think, is that safety and security affects everybody, and most especially the majority of the community. So actually, the focus of Safe Citizen is not on gun owners at all. Lawful gun ownership is a central theme, but actually the best members that we could possibly attract, the best member that I could want today would be an 80-year-old grandmother who looks after 4 grandkids during the day, who is aware of what's going on in her street, who knows the neighbors, and who pulls that street together as a block.
I mean, it's always been true, and I've never heard a good comeback to this, but it's better to have a gun and not need one than to need a gun and not have one. And being a lawful firearm owner is usually a very good indicator of that person's sense of responsibility, because it's a serious business to own a firearm. There are lots and lots of hoops you have to jump through. You have to get your license renewed. You have to go to the shooting range. You have to do the competence. So it's a big deal. It's like, you know, someone with a driver's license is a much more responsible driver than someone who's never, ever had the actual lessons or gone for the test. Even if it's a simple test, to pass it means that you are required to have some sense of responsibility there. I also think, Jonathan, it's so important what you're doing here, because people don't really have the faith that they might have in the police if maybe South Africa's police services were run a little bit better politically, if the officers had received better training themselves. I just don't think when people call the police, they have a sense of confidence about the fact that things will be dealt with, first of all, timeously, second of all, responsibly, and third of all, that there'll be some kind of follow through on the back end.
Absolutely, and I think you are completely right there. There is really what we're facing is, and this is on many levels in South Africa, but we're talking in the police environment, a breakdown in institutional trust. South Africans don't trust the institutions that are supposed to serve them, and when it comes to policing, it is a matter of life and death. I think it would be fair and accurate to say that the government really has misused its authority for party political aims. And that is exactly what they are pushing with the Firearms Control Act Amendment Bill. They are misusing their authority to establish their own party political aims, which has got absolutely nothing to do with the safety and security of people in South Africa. In fact, everything to do with making them less safe.
Jonathan, what would you say to people who are opposed to firearm ownership? What is your argument? Let's say, for example, Mash is not a big fan of guns, and he thinks that violence in society is caused by guns, and maybe he's had a bad experience in his community with someone who had a gun and used it for nefarious purposes. What is your argument to those people about why it's a good idea for people to have firearms?
I think I'm going to just haul out the name, the unfortunate name of that ill-fated organization, Gun Free South Africa.
Yeah.
Who painted themselves into a corner with the most ridiculous name, Gun Free South Africa.
Yeah.
South Africa will never, ever, in the lives of the great-grandchildren of anybody alive today, be gun free.
Correct.
And so a firearm is a necessary and intrinsic tool in a civilized society. Every single court order, every government instruction, every piece of legislation is underpinned by the fact that the state who we have elected and who we expect to serve us has got the authority via the lawful possession of a firearm to enforce the democracy, the will of the courts. So they are necessary and intrinsic tools in a civilized society. From a personal point of view, when one is looking at the devolution of safety and security that we've seen in this country, it is an absolutely essential item, and people should be free to choose to acquire one lawfully and possess one competently and lawfully. It doesn't, when people carry firearms, it doesn't mean that they're going around looking for a fight. It means that they are looking to protect themselves and possibly other innocent people.
Gareth, I want to
just if one just looks at a very recent well-known issue in Australia with Bondi Beach, if there were a number of lawfully armed and competent citizens there with firearms, that massacre might have stopped a lot earlier.
Yeah, you sometimes, the only way to deal with a bad guy with a gun is to have a good guy with a gun in the area. That's what people who are supposed supportive of firearms laws are trying to get done. And of course, in this country, they have made it as hard as possible for legal firearm owners to comply. They try to make the licensing as complex as they can. And I think that puts a lot of people off. Don't you think, Jonathan, it would be a good idea for more women in South Africa to have firearms? Because even if men who are violent towards women only thought that maybe there was a chance women had firearms, they wouldn't be as abusive, take as many chances, or attempt things that they might if they thought that that woman was unarmed.
Yeah, absolutely. I've trained more than 400 women to handle and lawfully possess firearms. The overwhelming comment that I receive at the end of the training or sometime after that is, I'm so pleased I did this. I don't feel like a victim anymore.
All right. So I think that this is terrific. Safe Citizen, where can we find out more information about this? And then I do want to talk to you about one other thing before we let you go. But tell us about where we can find out more about Safe Citizen.
very easy to find us. It's basically safecitizen.co.za. I have been able to put together a really significant volunteer team in the last couple of weeks. For the first time ever, I've established contact with high-powered black people in business and in social media. Mm-hmm. These guys are going to give the government chest pains. They have been trying to keep us out of this connection for so long. And quite frankly, to be blunt about it, the government is not impressed by people that look like me, old, white, wrinkled, and gray. They want to keep the people that represent the community properly. And I'm hoping very soon to see a new face in Safe Citizen. One of the dynamos behind that is a man called Bhatini Mbata. He's a traditional healer, has a very big following on YouTube, highly connected as a sports shooter, highly connected in various communities. Bhatini is going to give the government chest pains on behalf of Safe Citizen. So we are going, ladies, we're launching campaigns to attract the women in households, whether they're gun owners or not. But it's very easy for them to find us, safecitizen.co.za, and membership is free. The more members we have, the bigger voice we have, and we are already punching far above our weight class.
All right, so I think this is terrific, as I've said already, and I think what you're doing here is really laudable, and I'm thrilled that you're doing it. I'm less thrilled about your position on fracking in the Karoo. I mean, who cares about the Karoo, Jonathan? Shouldn't we be doing what every other major international power of any significance is doing and trying to get as much energy as we can to push this country forward? Isn't energy the engine of the economy, and shouldn't we be using what we've got?
100%. And I'm so pleased that you've asked that, because I know that you have a fairly close connection with Rob Hersoff, who is very pro-fracking.
Yeah.
And I hope that you'll tell him about my comments. Essentially, when I was asked by international journalists, why did you decide to get involved in fighting fracking? It's the same reason as I became involved in fighting the government on firearms and safety and security legislation.
Yeah.
I am motivated by an unfair fight. And Royal Dutch Shell arrived in South Africa, headed by a businessman called Bonang Mohale. Mm-hmm. And they told us, we are bringing fracking to South Africa, and it's going to create 200,000 sustainable jobs and this and that and all sorts of unbelievable promises. And I thought to myself, who have you discussed this with? Who have you consulted with about this? How are you going to manage it? Because, Gareth, at the nexus or the heart of my concerns lies the fact that the South African government cannot control mining operations. They can't control the existing mining operations, and they don't have the ability or the will to control this. The moment that they can prove that they could manage it the way that the Environmental Protection Administration does in the United States, we would probably be onto a good wicket. And there are many other things. This is a long conversation. But
all right,
essentially,
actually, I think we're probably closer on this than I initially thought then. You just don't trust government. It's like with the sovereign wealth fund, for example, if we had to start drilling offshore. It's not that we don't want that energy to be used for the benefit of South Africa. Yeah. We're just concerned that the people who will be put in charge of it will just steal.
Yeah, it can, and it can be a cleaner energy. It can be safely extracted under the right circumstances, but water is an absolutely critical resource in South Africa, particularly in an area like the Karoo.
Okay.
So one pollutes aquifers there, there's no plan B. But it can be done properly, but I don't trust them at the moment. Quite frankly, I don't even trust them to post a letter. The government.
You know what? I'm thrilled. I'm happy to say at the end of this conversation, Jonathan, we are probably completely aligned on these things. Not that you need to be when you come on this show, but I'm very, very impressed with the work you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Keep safe, guys.
Pleasure. Very good. All right. So there's Jonathan Deal, and you can find out more from him at safecitizen.co.za. Mash, I do need to talk to you about something before you go. We've got a lot in this morning's show. We've actually got a guest coming in a short while who I think you're going to like very much too. He is a counselor called Wesley Jacobs, and he is a counselor for the Freedom Front Plus in Tshwane Metro. He has military background. Okay. He served in the SANDF under 7 Medical Battalion. He qualified as a parabat and ops medic.
Oh, wow.
And he's been in joint operations with Special Forces. And he's a fascinating guy, and he's now running in politics because he's decided enough of the military, he's going to do this
what?
As well.
That is crazy. I think,
yeah, wild. So he's going to be lots of fun. And we'll find out all about that in a short while. But first, we need to talk about TikTok beggars.
Ooh, these e-beggars.
See,
that,
I'm not
a
on,
new term.
I'm not on TikTok, but are these people... Because I know for years already we've had to put up with people saying, back a buddy, GoFundMe,
yes.
Patreon.
Yeah.
You must pay for other people's Listen. Lifestyle. You yeah. must become a blesser for these yeah. people, and you must become a pseudo-parent because they expect free money just for being alive.
But the thing is, in the past, with your backer buddy GoFundMe, there was always a cause related to it.
Yeah.
They were begging towards a cause. They were
well, sometimes. Sometimes they were just saying, I just want to buy bottle yeah. service at a club.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So now the new trend is people are straight up begging. They don't care. They're going live on TikTok. And I just want the producers to just queue up that first video that I told you about, James. So basically, I'm going to introduce you to someone, Gareth. Her name is Maggie Foster. And I'm going to focus on her. I'm going to zoom in on her and use her as a good example All to right. introduce you to e-begging. This girl, she goes to the supermarket. And you know what, James? Just
oh
roll the video.
God.
I'll okay. explain it after. It's just so ridiculous.
I'm next. Oh, is I'm next? Oh no, she next. Yep, I'm okay. I'm getting the money now. I'm just short $10 to get it.
Huh?
I'm short $10 to get it.
You short $10?
Yep.
And you can't get them.
Yep. Well, I'm getting them. I'm just asking now.
Oh, okay.
I'm asking my lie.
All right. Did she do it yet?
Yeah. Oh, I'm waiting.
Okay.
I'm asking now. I'm asking somebody to send it.
Let me take somebody else while you wait.
Okay.
Next.
So I'm just short $10. Taking they said they're gonna take the next customer till
I get them out in the store. If you go in the dressing room or the restroom.
So okay. just need okay. 10 more.
Yep. That is our girl, Maggie Foster. And the reason I wanted to use her as a prime example of e-begging is because this girl goes to the shop, fills up her trolley, goes to the checkout line, and just as it's her turn, opens her phone, goes live on TikTok, and says, I need $20. I need $20. This is what I bought. I need to pay for it now. Y'all are going to send me the money. And you know what? People send her the money, Gareth.
Who are these people who would do? You see, I think if you don't ask, you don't get. And there are many people who are either too well-mannered, too shy, too proud to ask for
yeah.
help. And that may be a really great characteristic, actually.
Yes.
It may put you in very good stead, and other people may think highly of you.
Yeah.
But this is – first of all, this is a very low IQ human. Right.
Certainly.
I mean, you can see, I mean, her one eye is looking this way, other eye is that way. That's already a bad sign. She was
yeah.
forceps birth or dropped in her head or something. So she goes to the shop, she fills her trolley up, and then
Certainly.
Starts begging at the till.
Yep.
By the way, also inconveniencing everyone else in the
behind
queue
her. Yep.
because there are people lining up behind her. And even the cashier
yep.
I heard had to say to her, "Where are you, man, waiting over there while we let these other people pay?"
The cashier was even confused. She's like,
right.
"So they're sending the money now?"
Yeah.
She's like, "Yeah, I'm begging them. I'm begging
right.
them to send the money." She's like, "You look, stand to the side, girl. We ain't got time for this."
We've often said on this show that it's time to bring back shame.
It's long past due.
I think when it comes to asking other people to pay for your groceries.
In line.
Right. I don't think we should encourage this behavior. And I do have to say that whoever's helping to pay for Maggie, probably mm-hmm. Americans who, I
oh,
don't
they
know,
are.
They're online and they're bored.
Yeah.
These people are not helping. They're mm-hmm. encouraging more Maggies.
Certainly.
Because they're going to be other lazy, shiftless, worthless people
mm-hmm.
who are sitting at home doing even less than Maggie, going,
yeah,
oh, she's got a good idea. I think I'm going to do the same.
Yeah.
And now suddenly you have a drain on everyone else's time, compassion, resources, empathy.
Yeah.
This is horrible, Mash.
It's horrible. And the thing is, this trend has gone way past just groceries. There's a girl who begs people because she bought a house that where her mortgage every single month costs her approximately $25,000. Her house is ridiculous. It's a big mansion. Every month she goes on TikTok and begs people to help her pay her mortgage. And they do. They do actually give her the money. That 25 grand in dollars, they give her that money. It's crazy what the world has come to. And people are, for who keeps giving this money?
I think that's my number one question. That's the problem is, honestly, and it might sound horrible. And to some people, there are maybe sensitive people who may think that this is really cruel and unusual for me to say.
Yeah.
I don't think that's compassion.
It's not.
I actually think what you're doing is you're turning people into dependents.
Mm-hmm.
You're making them, you're removing their accountability and their self-sufficiency.
Certainly.
From them, and you're turning them into a kind of slave.
Mm.
They're a slave to donor money. They're
Absolutely.
A slave to other people's whims on the internet.
Yeah.
How could you ever be a happy, independent person if you allow other people to pay for your groceries?
Imagine. And on top of that, you have a cell phone. You have access to the internet.
So you're not...
Put that phone there.
Right.
And shake your booty. Shake your behind if you want some money out of us.
Entertain people.
Entertain us.
But to just beg...
Hey, guys, please, can I... We're not even... Okay, it's kind of entertaining sometimes. I'll give you one example of
why?
This.
Why? Because sometimes she doesn't get the money. Is that why you're laughing? That's mean.
Sometimes it gets absolutely ridiculous because on top of all of this, Gareth, some of these people actually get mad. When you don't send them money, not some of them, all of them, all of Big Talk.
Okay, no, that is fine.
They get so freaking angry when you don't send them money. And they'll be like, oh, like, for example, I'll give you one example. This other guy, his name is Hubs Life. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was a big, very massive TikTok influencer, millions of followers.
Yeah.
He's from, I believe, America.
Okay.
And he went viral based off of pushing the narrative that it's okay to live a 9-to-5 life. It's okay to live a what society considers a boring life and be
sure.
fulfilled by it.
Yeah.
And he started this movement and people were really following the movement more than him. He didn't even talk in his videos. It was always just videos with music, somber music playing, him living his boring ass life. And
yeah.
people were like, you know what?
Not
this
so
is okay.
Bad.
It's no. not so bad. But then he quit his job in order to be a full-time content creator. Which was a mistake because his job was his content. So he had no content. Mm. And what did he do? He went live on TikTok and started begging, asking people
Jesus.
For something called a galaxy. He's like, please send me galaxies. People are asking, what color are your eyes? He's like, you want to know my eye color? You got to send a galaxy. You got to send a galaxy. Anything you know, personal questions, you got to send a galaxy. And he completely ruined his own brand by begging people. And people are like, you know what? We can't deal with this person anymore. We can't take this person
you know,
seriously.
You think even in your own family, that there are sometimes people who you are more than happy to help the first,
Certainly.
Maybe the second, maybe the third, maybe even the fourth time. But when it becomes, when anyone in your life starts to take for granted what you're doing for them, and they start to think that something you have should be theirs automatically. Oh. It's not fun anymore.
It's not.
You know, there were a bunch of journalists who were fired at the Washington Post this week. And I think that this is only an interesting story because of so many of them who went online and started complaining about how rich Jeff Bezos is and why he couldn't have just kept them in sheltered employment. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll give you the facts. The Washington Post probably let off, I don't know, 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon, which is Jeff Bezos's founding parent company and generated the money that allowed him to buy all these other things, Amazon laid off, I think it was something like 10,000 workers.
Mm.
Because in the era of AI, there are lots of jobs that are replaceable now.
Certainly.
None of the journalists at the Washington Post even wrote one story about those 10,000 people who Amazon laid off. Not one story about the 10,000 people at Amazon who were laid off, but every journalist in the world is horrified about the 300 journos because, of course, you know, the media business,
yeah,
that no one moans more when they lose their jobs than the media people.
I know.
So the funniest thing I've seen in all of this is people who say, well, Jeff Bezos is one of the richest men in the world. He's worth $250 billion. Why should we lose our jobs? The Washington Post has been losing as a company. They made losses last year of $100 million. Ah. The Washington Post is costing its investors, its shareholders, $100 million a year at this point. If they want to save the company and for it to exist at all, they have to fire some people.
You have to pick either the company exists or y'all get paid.
So they fire a bunch of people, like the, you know, a couple of sports writers. They fire a couple of political commentators because there are enough of those on the internet.
Yeah.
And they fire people like the race and ethnic reporter, which is a bullshit job anyway, because if you're selling people race bait, that's not good, and it doesn't make the company richer. It makes everybody more unhappy, and it makes the company poorer. Anyway, this one woman went on. She's been fired now. She was a journalist of some kind, and she's like, ah, Jeff Bezos has got $250 billion, and he's worried about firing us from our $60,000 a year job or whatever. Like, you don't – it's not your money. And by the way, the reason he's running that company and other companies well is because he knows when to cut people loose.
Certainly.
He knows how to make it profitable. Yeah. These are people who obviously think just like – what's your woman's name?
Maggie Foster.
Maggie Foster. Mm-hmm. They think that other people should just pay them to exist. These people believe in some way that they are owed by the rest of us who are working a living. We should have to subsidize their existence. Yeah.
Jeff Bezos might subsidize their existence.
Yeah, just because he's wealthy. He didn't start off wealthy.
Yeah.
But because he is now, how? Why you never give me?
Yeah, why you never give me? Yeah.
Right. So here's Ronald Reagan, who can make perfect sense out of this. And then we'll catch up with you again soon, Mash. But watch this before you go, because this kind of – I didn't know it, but this is perfectly an encapsulation. Ronald Reagan was asked about this discussion he had with a young girl. She must have been like 9 or 10. Ooh. Take a look.
This little girl, what she wanted to be when she grows up. She said she wanted to be the President of the United States. Both of her parents, liberal Democrats, were standing there. So I asked her, if you were president, what would be the first thing you would do? Well, she replied, I'd give food and houses to all the homeless people. Her parents beamed. Wow, what a worthy goal, I told her. But you don't have to wait until you're president to do that. You see, you can come over to my house right now, and you can mow the lawn, pull weeds, and sweep my driveway, and I'll pay you $50. Then, I'll take you over to the grocery store where that homeless guy hangs out, and you can give him the $50 to use toward food and a new house. She thought that over for a few seconds, then she looked me straight in the eye and asked, why doesn't the homeless guy come over and do the work, and you can just pay him the $50? I said, welcome to the Republican Party. Her parents are still not speaking to me.
Spot on. Wise words from Ronald Reagan, who was president in the 1980s. He had figured this stuff out. Okay, so I don't know if you've seen, and we're going to probably – when are we getting that guy on who's posted those Virgin Active videos about how they're – next week. Okay, yeah, his name is Levi. I saw him on social media. He put out a video about how, you know, the subscription cost – for Virgin Active's gone up, but most members are not really getting any value. So we'll talk to him about this. I see also Virgin Active having a terrible time at the moment. Their legal department is now engaged in a situation concerning a personal trainer who was suspected earlier this month of discovering he's listed as a fugitive by Interpol. Yep. He is wanted in Romania for drug trafficking and reportedly faces a 16-year prison sentence there, according to Romanian authorities. And what was he doing? He was a personal trainer in the gym. Jesus. Not good. I don't think anyone is going to be thrilled to find out that their personal trainer is also wanted as a fugitive in Europe. And then speaking of Europe, of course, they're getting together at the moment for the Winter Olympics, which Ben is very excited about. So am I. I think there might be some cool things to watch. It's happening in Milan and Cortina in Italy. And they've ordered, I think this is hugely important, they've ordered sturdier beds because you may remember, embarrassingly, a bunch of environmentalists and climate change activists and green energy enthusiasts at the last Olympics prevailed upon the authorities, and they had to sleep on beds made of cardboard. Athletes at the Olympics, the world's best physical specimens in the prime of their lives, who were competing for medals in various disciplines, had to sleep on cardboard beds because of these environmentalists. So they've decided, screw that, we're not doing that with the Winter Olympics. Also, it was very hard with each other on cardboard beds because the beds would collapse, right? So now the Olympics are back and they are strong. And you know what else is strong is the condoms, because Paralympic alpine skier Andrew Kurka joked that the condoms are Olympic strong and the beds are Olympic strong. And while Paralympic sled hockey athlete Rico Roman recently added, what happens in the Olympic Village stays in the Olympic Village. So people are getting excited. There's going to be lots of opportunity for them to have plenty of protected or unprotected sex on actual beds with other athletes. Isn't this exciting? You know, you do wonder how seriously some of these sports people take it. But then you suddenly think, it's sport. Why should they not take it seriously? Or why should they in that frame of mind? So a couple of other things that I saw here that are worth discussing this morning, and we touched on a few of these with Dr. Hanan earlier, these catchphrases. Gord Laws and I had a conversation the other day about what the most irritating catchphrases in the world are when it comes to corporate speak. You know, when people talk about, I'll circle back to that later. Ben used that when we were talking on Zoom earlier with him, because he said it felt like a Zoom call. When people talk about, let's take this offline. Have you been in meetings where they've said that before? James, have you? Let's take that offline. I'm like, we're online. Everybody's online almost all the time. What do you mean, let's take that offline? Is it embarrassing? Is it like Leanne's bunions that we can't talk about this now? Someone needs to explain this to me. And there are so many others. So I'm going to go to the comments section, which is bound to already start becoming littered with these horrible, horrible sayings. Circle back's the worst. I mean, that became very famous when I think it was Joe Biden's first press secretary, who's now an MSNBC host. I can't remember her name. But she was the one who started the circle back thing. And I would love to know if there are things that are said in your office that drive you up the wall, where people, they've become so used to this corporate speak, because it also, it's, let's be fair, when people talk like that, what they're really doing is trying to protect themselves. They use the corporate speak so they feel like the in-group, right? And then you can have an out-group who you can exclude because they don't know the code language. But it's also because these people are, they're vacuous. They've got nothing going between their ears. They don't have anything valuable to say, so they talk nonsense. I think we should reconvene to see if there's a possibility of exploring more alternatives that will impact positively upon stakeholder value. Do you know what I just said? Nothing. Everything that I just said was complete nonsense. Her name was Jen Psaki. Thank you, Griquaman. That was the woman who circled back all the time. But you know, when people talk like that, when you're sitting in a meeting, and I see a little bit of this at the Mdlanga Commission, not from the commissioners, but from the witnesses, they sit there and they, Chair, you know, it's very important for us to
communicate effectively with the various levels of stakeholders. And you suddenly realize, like, these guys, they've got so used to talking nonsense, either in politics or in leadership, that they don't do anything. They don't say anything. They talk. Their whole job is talking. Debbie Farrell says, instead of just saying yes to a question I sent, the client replies with aligned. Aligned is a big one here. Hey, James? Yeah. Flex, don't you hate it when aligned comes up in a meeting or an email? Why don't you say, got you. Yes. Understood. Sure. Understood. Aligned. We're aligned on that. Yeah. I'm so thrilled that you use this word aligned instead of just speaking English anymore. When you hang out with a bunch of idiots, you start speaking like one, says Vyasan. That's spot on too. Jay says, my best is when guys send an email and use abbreviations. I mean, you're sending the email anyway. That's really stupid. Yeah. I don't know. I think there is a difference. If you use code, emoticons, abbreviations in WhatsApp, I think that's fine. I don't think that's a problem, but I'm talking about the corporate speak. You know, the words that people use, grassroots. What's the other one that people love doing? Is they copy in people who just remove responsibility from them. So if you copy in the whole organization, then your work is done. You're like, I'm washing my hands of this. You guys are all on the email as well, so now it's your problem. It's not mine. But there are words, there are phrases that people use. Bitcoin Boot says, how about noted? That is like the middle finger in corporate speak. Yeah, it's very passive aggressive to say noted. James, you do that sometimes.
I do, but not passive aggressively.
You say not passive aggressively, but it is. I think that noted, if you reply to an email and you say noted, it means either you've been put in your place, someone has called you out on something and you don't like it. So maybe that's why you say noted instead of, sure, no problem, or thanks for the email, I'll get right on that. Noted does feel a little bit like it's passive-aggressive. I don't think that's unusual. I'm trying to think of the other ones that Gord hates because corporate speak drives us both crazy. Let us – what's the other – I'm going to bring other people in on – there are a whole lot of terms that I hear being used. And by the way, you know, in business meetings, it is also such a time – destroying thing. People do this because they want to appear to be smarter than they are, but they don't want to actually say anything because saying something might mean you have to do it. So instead, you talk about this in, and I think we can blame the politicians. That's where it must have started. You know, at places like the United Nations, where it is your job to avoid doing something. So you create the language around it. James did tell Gareth indirectly to climb back up his mother's minge, so it seems like James is a noted kind of guy. Yeah, do you remember that video? that was something else. Is that woman who said, well, don't you climb back up your mother's minge?
I watched that video the other day.
That's a good one.
On Instagram.
Maybe it's time we
I have another
again.
Word. I have a word.
Yes, go ahead.
Low-hanging fruit.
Oh, yeah, low-hanging fruit. That means let's go for the easy wins, right? Let's try to do the stuff that we know will keep whoever the other party are happy. And the lowest-hanging fruit's a good one. Although, I do have to say, you know,
you don't have to explain low-hanging fruit to people. They kind of understand implicitly what it means, and therefore it can be shorthand for something quite useful. I don't think that's corporate speak in the irritating way that some of these others are. Flex for president, says Oxford Eye. Flex, are you, you got political ambitions? No, not interested. Okay, so Flex says no. Flex says absolutely not, no politics. J-Boy says another good one that irritates him. What are the optics? Okay, so when people in a business meeting talk about, we need to do this, but we have to think very carefully about the optics. Those are straight up bullshit people. They are bullshit people in every which way. They are people who are concerned about what people will think instead of what they're actually doing. These are people who are constantly looking for affirmation, and they are people who cannot take a principled position on anything. They will not be held to any kind of standard. They want everyone to like them. What are the optics? Fire people who talk like that. If you want to have a successful business, you need to get those people out. The days of spin are over. Those people are going to be a massive drag on your organization. Someone who's sitting there going, we need to do this, but what are the optics? Will lead to you becoming the most boring company in the world. Metallic Power says, I've noticed corporate speak is becoming a lot like DJ speak, where words are coming out, but you're saying nothing. Yeah, DJs used to say stuff like, it's a quarter past five, and that was Michael Jackson, The Way You Make Me Feel, and, you know, I hope you're having a great day today, and if you're not having a great day, then don't worry, we've got some of this coming up, as well as some sport and news and traffic and weather. And they teach you to say nonsense like this in radio because you're actually padding for time before a commercial break, or you're talking up to the intro of a song. So DJs became very proficient at talking bullshit. You're not wrong, Metallic Power. Mike Corum says, engage is one of my pet hates. Or what engagement has that got us on social media? Now, that's an actual term because social media, they measure engagement. It's how many comments, how many likes, how many interactions. It's what we're doing now, interacting with each other. They call that engagement. So it's a real thing in social media. But if you talk about, I'll engage with her on that, instead of to her, yeah, I'll, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get up, I'm going to walk over to her, and I'm going to talk to her. This idea that somehow if you say, with your pen in your hand, I'm going to engage with her on that, sounds more impressive? To who? What nonsense. Let's get down to the brass tacks, says Oxford Eye. It's interesting. The best sketch I've ever seen on that was, I think, Monty Python. That let's get down to brass tacks means let's get down to the real business here. But they went, let's get down to the brass tacks. And it was a government guy talking. He went, the brass tacks, which we're going to implement from next week, means anyone who has any brass will be taxed. DJ Fresh says, Kogetso, I don't think Fresh talks nonsense. He's got points of view. There are a lot of people in media who don't have points of view, but Fresh does have a point of view. Griquaman says, comrades, I stand before you to declare and pronounce, stating as well as express and announce, and but most importantly, talk about vocalizing my voice. All of that is the kind of bullshit we're talking about. Estate agents who talk about uninterrupted views. Listen, there's a whole other category of stuff there where they just lie. They say this is a premium property with bathroom amenities and facilities. You find out there's like one toilet and the basin's basically falling off the wall. So let's not even talk about estate agents and how much nonsense they talk. It is what it is, says Oxford Eye. That's an irritating statement because it's so yeah, it is. It's a stupid statement. It doesn't tell you anything. But sometimes it does mean that people are overanalyzing stuff and that they're thinking they can change things that are unchangeable.
And therefore, sometimes the best thing to do to just call them to order is to say it is what it is. What are you going to do? You can't go back in time and change it. We've got to deal with what we have. We shall convene later, says Bitcoin Boot, instead of just, yeah, let's meet tomorrow. AI overview corporate speak also, such as known business jargon, management speak, while intending to enhance communication is often seen as irritating, vague, or used as a mask for a lack of knowledge. Did you get that from AI? Because if you copied that straight off AI, I'm not impressed. It is correct, but hopefully you're not talking about just typing this in and going, why don't you give me irritating commercial or business jargon? Renovator's dream, again, this is on the estate agent thing. Yeah, renovator's dream means the place is a dump and you're going to have to fix everything yourself. I do want to quickly go back to the poll. James, have you picked up any votes here? The 39% of people say that you are the best producer ever. Who's James is the next biggest category. Oh, no. What does he even do is the next biggest category. Then who's James at 21%. And yes, fire him. A long time ago, he should have been fired, 15%. But James, if you add up the three negative categories, 39 plus 21... What's that put us at? 60. Yeah, 60%. Plus...
So you're saying in totality I'm looking pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, if I add up all of these, let's just do a quick calculation here, James. What did someone say earlier? Let's get down to brass tacks. Okay, so 39% say, no, you're the best producer ever. Okay, so well, that's your positive. But then we add 15% who say you should be fired. What does he even do at 25%? And 22% saying, who's James? That's 62%.
But it could be argued that who's James isn't necessarily a negative. It's just like, before I answer the question, I want to know who James
is. Sorry, it doesn't look good. That's all I'm going to say. It really doesn't look good. This is a very, very bad outcome for you. Gareth, please do a once-a-week live show in the evening during prime time. That'll be great. I'm working on something quite cool. I can't talk about it now, but there are three major things in the pipeline for this year, which will give me more options and I think excite a lot of people. So I can't say too much yet, but there are going to be things happening. For people who think I'm just coasting and fucking around, I promise you I'm not. Richard says, James should wear a headset with built-in microphones so that we don't have to hear him in the background when he speaks. Have you not connected your microphone?
I'm on a microphone right now.
So then why are people complaining about not being able to hear you?
I couldn't tell you, but I'm on the same Vimeo call as Hernandez.
Should we fire the comment section for being wrong?
Hey. Don't tempt me with a good time.
Maybe that's something. That's the next poll, James. Should we fire the comment section for being wrong?
I like it.
All right, I want you to see this picture of these two ICE agents, they're enforcement agents. So before we put the picture up, there have been a lot of complaints coming out of Minnesota that ICE is too heavy-handed. This is in America, obviously. Donald Trump's immigration policy is in sharp focus at the moment. People saying, oh, it's so unfair, and you know, little Juan is ripped out of his parents' arms and he's taken away to the Mexican border and he's dumped in the Tijuana desert. And this is so mean. And ICE is so mean. And immigration policy is so mean. And even Billie Eilish went at the, the Grammys on Monday, went up on stage and she's like, oh, I don't know what to say. But then says, after saying she doesn't know what to say, no one is illegal on stolen land. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to work out why there are so many contradictions in that statement. If it is stolen land, that means that someone else owned it before. If someone owned that, then property has value. If property has value, then it is illegal to take someone's property from them. either you believe in the end of that statement, stolen land, or you believe in the beginning part of that statement, that no one is illegal. But you can't have both. So Billie Eilish, great at songs, fucking stupid at philosophy. So she and her brother should stick to songs, which is why we have the Grammys, to award songs. No one is having an awards show where we ask celebrities to say really important and interesting and powerful things that have application in everyone else's real world. Why? Because they're singers. Would you, James, would you take financial advice from Billie Eilish?
No.
Investment advice. Let's say Billie Eilish opened up a website tomorrow, like Good or whatever, and she said, I am Billie Eilish. I've got the Billie Eilish investment portfolio and financial services business. I'm going to make your $5 into $50. Would you believe her?
No, but if she came to me and offered a service of like, I can teach you the theory of music,
I'll write you a song with your name in it. Or yeah, that makes sense. You'd be willing to pay a lot of money for that. Yeah. I mean, you could tell everybody that Billie Eilish wrote you a song.
100%.
Phenomenal. Okay, so let's keep in our lane here, Billy. And I really don't think that people who talk about no borders should be setting up areas with borders. There's a woman that they interviewed this week, an old white lady, who she doesn't see the irony. She's like, we've set up a checkpoint and we've closed off this area so that nobody can come in and remove the illegal immigrants. In other words, you've created a border and you are stopping people from coming in who may be, what, immigrants? Nobody seems to think that that's any contradiction in terms among her friends, because they were all standing there going, yeah, say it loud, sister. These are very dumb people. We do not need to take them seriously. We do not need to listen to them. And by the way, this is another thing that's been coming up, is you have all these old and middle-aged white people, mostly women, protesting ICE. I don't see a lot of people of color, as they call them in America. I don't see a lot of black people taking part in these protests. So the white liberals are out there on their own. It's almost as if no one wants to be around them. It's almost as if they're an embarrassment. And here are the two ICE agents who apparently were responsible for one of the famous incidents during these ICE raids. Take a look. This is interesting. So we've got two ICE agents who shot Alex Pretty. He was the guy who was killed last week. Were not racist white men. They were both Hispanic. Oh, that's inconvenient. The guy on the left is jacked as fuck, right? I mean, that guy is like, I would not fucking mess around. If he came up to me and said, get away from the car, or I think I'd do what I was told. And the oak on the right looks like he knows how to handle a gun. He's got those, you know those glasses? When a guy wears those glasses, you just know he's a very serious gun enthusiast, right? He's got like the anti-glare polarized shooting lenses. And that's in, he's got the gear, there's no recoil that's going to be going into his shoulder, and certainly nothing that that is going to shatter and go into his eyes. I mean, like, this guy's prepared. So those are the two law enforcement agents who did take down that Alex Pretty guy. Again, I think it's hilarious that they tried to make Alex Pretty prettier for MSNBC. They actually gave him a bit of a tan. They photoshopped his picture a little bit to make him a bit more heroic and a little less ugly and unattractive, just so that they could win a couple more viewers over to his cause. Because who would want to support the guy on the left? Probably you're more likely to support the guy on the right. It's just unbelievable. It's like whenever I'm on rare occasions these days, but it used to be the case that I would be in the newspapers often. The only reason that that slowed down is because there are no newspapers anymore. But they used to always take the cuckest pictures they could find of me because they didn't like me. They would always use the ugliest, shittiest pictures from like when I was 20, and they would use those. They would never use anything that was up to date. They would never use anything that I might have liked. It had to be the ugliest pictures. So if they like you, you'll get Alex Prettied. If they don't like you, you'll get Gareth Clift. That's how it works in the media. It's bloody hilarious. Wish we had ice in Hillbrow, says Santana. And in Germiston, and in Benoni, and in Boksburg, and in every township in South Africa. Yeah, we have an illegal immigrant problem. We just don't have anyone who would be able to police it. That guy has a sniper mustache, says J-Boy. And then Limited Edition says, whoever doesn't know who James is and what he does must just go back under the rock they live in. I mean, how many times do we have to keep telling you he's the producer? What, like a million times? There's a lot of anger from Limited Edition here. It's Friday. Calm down, dude. I don't think an ICE operation would work in South Africa. It's like trying to heal a dead horse. Okay, howdy-da, Dave. Limited Edition back with whoever doesn't know James and what he does must be off their rockers. This guy's very into you being a producer, James. Very, very. It's very important to Limited Edition that people know. People have got to know, as Richard Nixon said. What James does for a living? Well, he's a producer. Papa Sos says, who edited that photo? I need some pictures for Tinder. Got to put your best foot forward. Maybe you should just get ChatGPT to do one of those caricatures. Have you guys done yours? No. Both of you do them and let's see what you come up with. It'd be fun to put those up and share them with people. I don't know what the prompt is that everyone's using. I don't know whether it's is it a separate app from ChatGPT or is it just on ChatGPT? Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm not interested in doing one, but I was curious because everybody was doing them yesterday. I thought he was Bond, James Bond. Oh, nice, James. That's what Chris Smith says. Yeah. Hey, have we got our guest? Okay, is he going to be online? Okay, brilliant. So he's in – I was driving in my neighborhood the other day, and I see posters of this guy. Also, like that ICE officer's Jack dude, and he looks like the opposite of what we're used to seeing in politics. I mean, we all watched John Steenhuisen's, or maybe you didn't. I mean, I certainly didn't watch it, but I heard about John Steenhuisen's resignation. So we're used to seeing like politicians, and most of our parliamentarians are fat, they're pasty, they're lazy. You know, these are not great specimens of humanity. And you think to yourself, well, why are they our leadership class if they look like that? So I was driving through my neighborhood the other day and I see this guy on the posters and I'm like, that does not look like a politician. His name is Wesley Jacobs. He's running as a councillor. We'll find out exactly where in a moment or two. But this is a fascinating story because I hear through the grapevine, I'm like, I post the picture on one of my friends' groups and somebody says, oh, yeah, yeah. That guy's phenomenal. He's been in the military. He's got all kinds of military training. He was a parabat, special forces, 7 medical battalion. I'm like, holy shit, okay. There might actually be some cool, interesting people entering politics. So I thought we got to find out who he is. I found out through someone else that he's in the Vryheidsfront Plus or the Freedom Front Plus, and he is a councillor in the Tshwane Metro, as well as being a community activist. Now, I always get a bit nervous when I hear the word activist, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here. Have you got him on? No? Oh, is he on? Okay, brilliant. Wesley, how's it, man?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. Dude, it's nice to actually meet you for the first time. I saw your posters along the road in my neighborhood the other day, and I thought, this guy doesn't look like a politician. And then I found out a little bit about you and where you come from and what you've been up to. So you're a councillor, huh?
Yeah. So I'm a councillor. I was elected in 2021 on the 1st of November. And it's basically the only time you're on a poll and you don't actually get paid for it, you know?
Yeah. Listen, I think it's wild, dude. I didn't know you'd been in 2021, because now, what election was this one that I saw?
So the one that you saw was the local, it's a local by-election that happened. The previous ward councillor passed away, peace be with him. And then we had to elect a new ward councillor.
So was
in that,
that
particular
for,
ward 57.
So was that for your party, or was the ward councillor from another party, the one who died?
It was from the oppositional party.
Oh, well, I mean, that created a gap for you. Don't, you know, I wouldn't say I'm thrilled, but I mean, it's a good thing. So when is this election happening?
So it already happened. It happened on the 21st of January. It's at a weird time. That's why the outcome was not as what we'd hoped, but the result showed exactly the effort and work and footprint that I have within the ward, because I've been working in it for such a long time. So my reputation actually precedes me, and that's why I have what people call the big party running for the hills. I won two voting districts out of the three, but we can touch on more of that when we maybe get to that point of
reference. Yeah, sure. Of reference. Okay, listen, I think it's fascinating. You went into politics from the military, which, you know, in America, that's often a thing that happens. A lot of presidents used to be generals. I mean, Eisenhower's name comes to mind. And people like the idea that someone who's from the military has discipline, they're accountable, they're the kind of people you can rely on. Tell me about your military career and how you decided to go from that into politics.
Yeah, so look, one interesting aspect also that we can look at is the word integrity. And that's something that you learn, especially when there's blood, sweat, and tears, literally, figuratively, everything that you can think of, spiritually, emotionally, you feel it, especially the gruesome selection processes that you need to take in order to qualify for the courses that I was set upon. So what drove me there is pure passion. And I've always wanted to be in the military, to serve. It's in my blood, I guess, my father as well. He was task force and things like that. So I guess I inherited that same type of passion. But it's mainly driven by change. You know, I was very ignorant at the time to think, you know, if I join the military, I can help save this country. But yeah, unfortunately, you realize that you're just another pawn being sent from pillar to post and not actually making the change and the difference that you actually would love to see, you know, in the country. Yeah, so
I don't want to move on yet, because I do think it's fascinating that you were in 7 Medical Battalion, which you have to tell us about. I want people to understand what that unit is. And then you were a parabat, and I mean special forces. You know, again, when we think of our military in South Africa, we think of, unfortunately, the fat generals that we see on TV who appear every now and then because there's a corruption charge or something terrible has happened. But we do have very, very good people in our military, and I do think we've got to take a moment just to consider that these are the people who do put their life on the line and get orders and get things done and try to keep this country safe. They certainly, you know, like any military in the world, these are some of the most devoted, dedicated people. And I do want you to talk about your training in the military and the units that you were part of and the kind of training that you received while you were there.
Awesome. Thank you for that opportunity. So, you know, 7 Medical Battalion is the special operating unit within SAMS, so the South African Military Health Service. So we were the actual medics that gave support to the special forces. So we had to do the same type of training to keep up with that caliber of military experience. So we were sent out. We did our ops medic courses, which is equivalent to a CAA in the civilian world. So we worked with 32 types of drugs. We could do craniotracheotomies, we could do work with a laryngoscope, we could do intubations, we could do basically anything that needed to be done in an emergency situation. So what separated us from a medical doctor was that we could work in a more emergency and out of control environment, you know? Right. We're not going to be asking for scalpel, please, and then give me...
This is like battlefield medicine, effectively.
Yeah, so bullets flying, your life is at risk as well, you know? The training was rigorous, you know, we had a 5-day selection process, little to no sleep, food, and that was for paramedics to qualify as a paramedic, you know. Where people that have never been on an aircraft before in their life has to actually jump out of one. And you ask yourself the question, but this is a purely serviceable aircraft. It's flying. So why do I need to exit right now? So those are the type of questions that you ask yourself. But obviously, being the person that I am, I love for adrenaline. I love for all those, extramural activities. I'm an adrenaline junkie. So we love to jump. We love to shoot. Like I said, we were the cream of the crop when it came to military service. Mm-hmm. We were always also attached to the president's detail as well.
Really?
You'd see the last vehicle. Yeah, the last vehicle at the back with the red lights would be us. And that would also be the last vehicle that you'd want to actually knock on the door and ask for money. Because, that's where all the weapons are as well.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So in any of those blue light brigades, especially if it's the president or the deputy president, the guys with the red lights at the back are actually the main oaks.
Yeah, I must also just touch on the topic to say that, you know, I left at a very unstable time where, you know, the military was becoming not the military anymore. And to put that into some sort of degree would be to say that we are now finding people that are looking for jobs. They are not passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah.
They are there basically because they want to put bread on the table. When I was there, you know, passionate, you could take my salary, you could take everything away from me. They basically, every single day was a challenge. It was not easy. The easiest day was yesterday, the day that you basically finished. So, you know, it was extremely tough for us. It wasn't for everybody. That's why our selection process, you know, that we've been through, it starts at 350 and it ends up to about 14 people. The best of the best, you know.
These are South Africa's Navy SEALs, right? I mean, that's essentially the comparison to make.
Yeah, you can. It's the best of the best. So we get selected from here to be attached with the special forces and be sent out on whatever peacekeeping missions, if you want to call it. It's like I said, it's been degrading. And my experience had to come to an halt, unfortunately, due to, you know, racial activities. For the first time in my life, I found that I was not black enough for a promotion or to go forward. And it's the first time in my life I actually realized that color was a qualification and not your actual qualifications. And that actually presented itself when I took a look back to see from pre-94, if you want to call it, or 93, what was our generals like before? Did they serve? What was their qualifications? Because now if I look in today's day and age, you are actually promoted within that circle that was once how you to refer to as activists back in the day, you know?
Right.
You are not promoted in a sense of, do you have the qualifications, the knowledge, the skills? Do you even have a military background? Have you ever served in your life, you know? Now we, at the current moment, we're having a teacher that is our minister of our actual SNDF chief at the moment that is in control of our military. We have somebody that knows our ABCs. So, you know, is that the correct person to basically take charge of our military? You know, there's so many other people that are qualified and have the knowledge and the means, but obviously they were not in that inner circle to get that, those, you know, perks of promotion.
I mean, it's,
and you see that through BEE as well.
It's got to be disappointing when you've devoted so many years as you did to being in the military. You've done all the training, you're in an elite unit. You are required to do things like be in the president's detail or maybe go off to active operation zones and you know, give medical care, help jump out of planes, all that kind of thing. And then you see our military being reduced to what it is, which is essentially a laughing stock compared to what it used to be. I mean, we used to be a formidable country, and whether it's right or wrong under the old regime or the new, everybody in South Africa wants to be able to be proud when our soldiers are called upon to do the very difficult work they do. And it's disappointing and depressing for us to know that there are just not the kinds of standards that we would like to see upheld in some of the highest levels of our military. I do want to move on, though, because you've had an incredible life since then. So you decided, enough with that, I'm going to go into a place where I can actually make a change. First of all, what made you want to go into politics? And second of all, what attracted you to the party that you're a member of now?
So when it came to the party, obviously I had to look at the broader picture. And let me just go one step back to say that, you know, when it comes to the military personnel, don't get me wrong, we are one of the best militaries in the world. We just do not have the sufficient support and budget structures to support them. So that is on a national level. They obviously have other means of where they are pumping their money. Maybe, you know, I speculate, you know, their private bank accounts, but let's not speculate about that. But yeah, the reason I joined the Freedom Front Plus was one reason and one reason only. And that is the same reason we need to educate the voters on how to vote. You need to align yourself with the same values, morals, and ethics. It's a very personal thing to do when it comes to voting. You know, you need to take things into consideration. What does the party stand for? You know, and the Freedom Front Plus hit me in the first line of the actual constitution. You know, they speak of the triunion God, and I am unapologetically Christian and unapologetically conservative. Those four are really directly in line with the party and their views. You know, they stand up for minorities. Yes, they stand up for the Afrikaners, because who else is going to stand up for them? You know? And this is a party that shows they have a backbone. Our party represents an anchor, and God is our anchor. We have some sort of accountability, whereas other political parties, they have nothing. They are spinning around like a windmill, trying to grab onto something because there is nothing. They're either for everything or they are for nothing. There is nothing that stabilizes them and grounds them. For example, if there's a certain political party, which we all know, that was basically given the doomsday vote to say, if you don't vote for us, the NHI is going to be put into place, the Bella Bill is going to be put into place. You know, all those actions that we stood against. And the very same ministers that they have employed are actually putting them into processes. They are the ones that are going to be signing them in currently, you know, to keep face with their puppeteers in the GNU. So that's another topic that people like to touch on. Why are we in the GNU? I look at it from a military perspective. I would rather be on the inside in enemy territory and know what they are up to and what they are doing so that I can report back to my constituency to let them know, and as well as to hold them accountable for their actions. Because if I'm not in that room, I don't know what they are up to and what they are persecuting, what they are getting through the processes of South Africa. So for us to be in there, we're also the only, well, I don't need to obviously put it out there. Everybody knows that we are the only, we have the only minister that is actually doing work, you know, changeable work, things that actually make factual difference within the country, you know, saving, you know, hundreds of millions.
Yeah, I mean, they're calling him Oom Piet, and Pieter Groenewald in corrections is seemingly doing a very good job in a horrible portfolio. I mean, it's like the most depressing, nasty, ugly portfolio, and yet he's in there and Oom Piet's getting stuck in. So, Wesley, you mentioned, you know, that you believe in the values of this party. A lot of people might say, and this is probably something that you've had to answer from many people along the way, why would you be in a Afrikaans party, because that's what people say it is, why would you be in a white Afrikaans party full of ooms and dunnies? I mean, I don't think this, but this is what some people think. And aren't they just using you in order to appeal to a new part of the electorate? Or are you using them maybe to appeal to a different electorate? What do you say to that stuff?
Yeah, so that is the type of stereotypical mindset that I would love to, you know, address. Mm-hmm. And by me showing who I am, where I come from, I joined the political party that, yes, is stereotyped as an Afrikaner party. But what you must remember is it's called the Freedom Front Plus. I am exactly what you can refer to as the plus within the party. We have opened up to all diversities. So the thing is, it's not about a certain race. It's not about the gender. It's not about anything, you know, specialized. It's purely based on, can you stand up for who you are?
Yeah.
Can you be proud of where you come from? What type of heritage and traditions do you, you know, uphold and can stand firmly upon? You know, and those people can join us and we will open up to them with open arms. We are not just in my opinion, it's not a political party to me, it's a family. Mm. People can say and believe what they want to, but that's how I feel. And I'm not going to be like the rest. I know because I got a lot of kickback saying that, are you just not like the other Jacobs? The thing is, I'm not the party hopper. And the thing is, I have morals, I have ethics, I have values. And like I said, I align myself with the only political party that is in the same direction as me. My moral compass is pointing towards the Freedom Front Plus, and there is no other political party. I would rather leave politics as a whole than to change my political stance.
So,
and my community knows that.
How old are you at the moment, and do you think that you appeal specifically to younger voters? I mean, do you think that there's an interest, because obviously we know in the last election, young people didn't exactly come to the polls in their droves, and maybe they're not seeing the kind of people who they want to represent them. Do you think you might have a special niche ability to attract Gen Z voters in particular?
I would hope so. And look, I'm 32 years old. I'm a born free, if you want to call it that. I'm born in 1993. So I was born out of, you know, that era, or if I can call it the era. So the thing is, if we want to see a change, we need to be that change that we want to see. So my generation, we need to start, you know, participating. We can't just say, no, we don't care about politics. We don't want to involve ourselves. But when you hit a pothole, who do you scream at, you know? When you drive past a traffic light and it's not working, who do you shout at? You know, when your lights don't work, your water don't work, it's going to affect you. You are not out of reach or out of touch with politics. Politics is all around you. It's just a matter of how you address it and how you involve yourself. So when it comes to being a born free, you know, and just going back to the military aspect. So I was oppressed by somebody that was once oppressed. And like I said, I was born out of that apartheid era, but into a new form of it, where I was marginalized and, you know, put into a box. And that was one of the things that actually made them angry was, you know, you get that consensus forms where you have to say A, W, C, or O for other.
Mm-hmm.
So what I used to do was I used to make my own box. And in that box, I used to say SA, because that's what I am. I'm a South African born baby. It's simple as that. You know, you go anywhere around the world. What are you? I'm American, you know. You go anywhere else, I'm Cuban. But when we get to South Africa, you want to say, no, I'm white, black, colored. It makes no difference, you know.
Yeah.
And coming back to one of the questions that I asked the colonel when addressing me, saying that he doesn't like my race. I asked him, are you a religious person? And he asked me, what does that have to do with it? I said, everything, because me as a Christian, and when I die and I go to heaven, God is not going to say white here, black here, colored here. I'm going to judge you. He's going to say, those with sin, step forward and I will judge you. So why are you as an insignificant human being making yourself more superior than God? So for me, you know, Christianity gives you a basis to stand on. The military gave me the skills and the abilities to obviously conform within my community and how to tackle certain situations. So all of those skills that I've learned over the last, you know, 10 years of my life, that I would love to implement and upskill and uplift, you know, and liberate people that are in a similar situation as me. So my generation, pushing them forward, you know, we need to start getting involved to control the country, because what people forget is the most important person and most powerful person in this country is a voter. A voter has the power to remove a president. I don't understand why they don't understand the significance around how powerful their vote is. And then you get people saying, yeah, but it's just one vote. That one vote can make or break a country.
Yeah. Listen, I admire. I wouldn't do it. I think you're very brave to be in politics. It's an ugly business. You were talking about the DA earlier and you know, these ministers who have abandoned principles and are doing whatever they can to hold on to their ministries. But, I mean, we saw John Steenhuisen basically not make himself available as leader of the DA in the next round of elections. I felt I don't really care about politicians. It takes a lot for me to be compassionate about the cause or the travails of a politician. But I did think, you know, these people like you who put their life on the line to do something for South Africa, and they're a very rare species, people like you. Most politicians are in it for themselves. And most of us can see through their nonsense. But I think it's great that you're doing this. And I think it's even better that you're a guy who has, like, these are my values and I'm not going to be turned away from them. I think it's great. I'm just glad that you could make it into the show today. We get to know you a little bit. Thanks, Wesley.
No, thanks. Appreciate it. And the thing is, you know, coming with the morals, values, and ethics direction, you know, myself as well as the party, we are not willing to bend over backwards, not for position, not for power, especially not for a voter. I will not change my directions or my views just to win over your vote. And that's what a lot of political or specific political party is doing. They will jump through hurdles just for that one vote. And the thing is, you know, it waters down what you stand for. But then again, you don't stand for anything, you know. The thing is, with regards to my commitment to the community, you know, the military gave me the skills and the operative skills to always be on the ground. I'm not somebody that you'll find in the office. You can ask any one of my residents, I will tell you straight, Councillor Wesley Jacobs is always on the ground. And that's where I am. You know, a guy approached me and asked me, you know, can I meet you in your office one day? I said, just take a look around you. This is my office, you know, and that's my home.
So Wesley, that's an interesting point, because local politics is not glamorous. I mean, if you are a councillor, you have to be out there checking that streetlights are working. You need to have potholes fixed. It's not a glamorous business. You're not walking around shaking hands, doing photo opportunities, and sitting in a council chamber voting on things. You're actually out in there, in the mess, trying to sort it out. That's not glamorous work. Do you enjoy it?
I love my job, but just coming back to people with their photo opportunities and video opportunities, the opposition loves to do that, you know. Myself, I have so much examples of when I do things and they just come take their pictures and they leave. The residents are so used to it already. They're like, okay, yeah, the DA comes, take their pictures, and there they go, you know. And the thing is, I can call it, I have enough proof. The residents, I think the residents are fools, you know, and they're oblivious to these things. They can hear, they can see, they can smell, they know, you know. It's just that few that are in denial, if I can put it that way. You know, it's like it can't be. They can't be these bad people. And if you're going to look at the history of what they've done now recently to me personally, you know, they've hit three strikes. They've hit, you know. If I can just touch on the by-election alone, you know, they basically paraglided somebody in that has no history, no anything to do with council, no background, no anything. We basically call it the broom and mop theory. You know, the DA can put a broom and a mop there and they can think they can win the ward. But I gave them a run for their money in this one, because this is where service delivery spoke.
Which ward is this, by the way?
So this is Ward 57 in Littleton. It was neglected for two terms, and that's why it was in the state that which I received it, where I rehabilitated it in the best, you know, possible way that I could with the powers that I had. You know, I was working as a PR counselor, as a ward counselor in the interim of the loss of my colleague from the opposition. Look, I don't hate the opposition. I don't hate my colleagues from other political parties, you know. We are oppositions. I work with it because we're supposed to have the same direction as to uplift our communities and do things in the best interest of our residents, you know. And that's how I function. That's why I can't sleep at night. I got OCD. So if I don't pick my boxes, I'm going to have sleepless nights. And it's an unfortunate thing to have as a honest politician, you know. It's a bad trait to have, because you want to correct everything, but you always relying on third party. You know, we don't cut the grass. Okay, well, no. I do. If you look at my Facebook, you will see I do grass cutting as well in my spare time. Again, it's not a paid job, but I do it because I want to, not because I need to. People are still saying, yes, but you were doing it for the by-election. Okay, the by-election is over. I lost. Why am I still cutting grass? It's because I didn't need to. You know, I wanted to do it out of my own, because I want to uplift my community. You know, I want to see a difference. I want to see a change. And my slogan and, you know, my goal is to insist that wherever I go, I leave the place in a better condition than what I found. So we are doing our green waves and our campaigning, I don't want us to just stand at the robot and then give pamphlets. No, do something proactive. Something that is going to make a difference in the community. Leave the pamphlets. Let's go cut grass. Let's go paint street lines. Let's do something for the community. By our actions alone, it speaks more than a pamphlet. That is my belief. So like I say, my journey through where I've come from has put me in a different political space. I am not a politician. I am a community activist. I put the community first. So I am community motivated. I am not politically driven. I use politics as a tool to get my residents what they need and what they want, that is going to make their basic services better. Other political parties use them as a tool to get their political motivated, whatever aspects they get out of you know, using residents as tools.
We've got to cut this because the show is coming to an end. But I think that line that you had just now, leave everything better than you found it. We should all live by those principles. And I think the world would be a much better place if everyone did. But lovely to meet you, Wesley. Thank you so much. And we'll catch up soon.
Awesome. I was promised by the producer that I'll be back soon so we can finish up the discussions.
All right, cool. No, come into the studio Thanks. Next time.
Thanks It'd be for good your
to
time. See
you. Thank you so much. All right, awesome. That's all Thanks we have time so much. For this morning.
Appreciate it.
I do want to throw this in. I mentioned to James and to Flex earlier, and I thought that probably a lot of people in the comments section would want to know this too. I got a letter dated 5th of February from TV licenses, guys. Renewal of your domestic TV license. Your television license falls into the 1st of the 3rd, 2026 to 28th of the 2nd, 2027 licensing period. They're ready to charge me until February 2027 already. The license fee amount payable is 3,542 Rand. Your license payment is more than a payment. It's a way to keep our stories alive and our talent shining bright. I won't be participating in this again. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. No more TV licenses from me. All right, everybody, cheers. We'll see you on Friday next week. Have an awesome weekend.